broadcast with your host, Spread Love, on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreessen, your host. Join Willow, Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
Alright, let's show them what we got here.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is February 19, 2022. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are in episode number 100 of Operation Scorpio. Yes, we have finally entered the triple-digit realm and nearly 2 years of weekly shows. Oh, yeah, time flies when you're having fun, as the saying goes. Yes, and here we are watching jackbooted thugs crack heads and break up a peaceful protest in Canada. Oh, yeah, one of those peaceful protests. Pulling truckers out of their trucks and kicking ass and taking names. All in the name of democracy, guys. Yes, democracy. Our heroes defending our values, right? And what are those values, you might ask? Well, defending the right for every man, woman, and child to be forcibly vaccinated or lose your job. Yes, it's your right to roll up your sleeve and be injected with poison. That is your right. And furthermore, you have the right to choose Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, or Moderna. Pick your poison. Coke or Pepsi. Burger King or McDonald's. Because we live in a democracy and we're free. Oh, yeah, baby. So, yeah, yesterday, guys, you know, I spent quite a bit of time watching, you know, the live footage from Canada and just seeing the very bad optics coming out, for the other side, even though it looks like the protest is essentially over now. I don't know. Maybe somebody in chat could, confirm that, but as far as I know, it's basically a done deal. It's over. But you know, a lot of bad optics for the other side. I mean, you basically had, you know, jackbooted thugs and goons arresting people, beating people up. And apparently I saw this video where the Imperial Goon Squad rode in on horses and actually trampled two women. I guess apparently one of them died, a grandmother. And, you know, this lady was just moments before talking about everybody needing peace, love, and freedom. And then she was trampled by an Imperial stormtrooper. Really amazing. Yeah, and I guess one of these women died in the hospital, you know, if we believe the reports. You know, who knows? But it's not good, and she certainly got trampled. And you would think the meme warriors are going to grab onto this one and, you know, really run with it, because these are people are granny killers now. You know, I mean, really, that's what it comes down to. Yeah. But really, you know, we're in kind of a propaganda war, and if the protesters really had some strategic thinking, they would push this in the media worldwide. You know, like have a funeral march for this woman in the streets, you know, remembering her life, you know, maybe a candlelight vigil, you know, mourn the loss of an innocent woman who was essentially trampled, you know, callously trampled by New World Order thugs sent in by Justin Trudeau and his masters, the International Elves and the World Economic Forum and all the other little secretive organizations that really all dovetail together at the top. And really, you know, the Star Wars Imperial March song, you know, the Darth Vader theme song should have been playing when those goons rode in on their horses, you know. It's so disgraceful. Yeah. Yeah, I could just hear the music playing, you know, dum, 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 bum, 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 bum. Right when the Imperial stormtroopers, I mean, the hero police rode in on their horses. Just amazing. And it is kind of interesting, you know, this whole notion of having cameras everywhere is certainly backfiring, at least some of the time. Because it is getting more difficult to cover things up, like in the good old days. And now, you know, untidy events are sort of there for all the world to see, even though they do their best to remove everything from the public consciousness. So, yeah, you know, technology really is a double-edged sword for all of us and for the international elf who seeks to control everything and everyone. But again, we really are seeing the official narrative implode on all fronts simultaneously. And I don't think there's much they can do to stop that. The lies are getting less and less palatable, even for the average normie in Normieville. It's starting to wear thin, guys. And it really is getting more and more difficult to sweep everything under the rug because a big bulge of dirt is starting to build up underneath the carpet. And it's getting bigger every day. And that's what happens when you have lies stacked upon lies. Eventually, the house of cards does come down. It's inevitable. But who knows the timeline? That's the hard part to know. Yeah, guys, and as we speak, this also the war in Ukraine keeps rearing its ugly head. And I know it seems like things are really heating up there between Russia and Ukraine. But honestly, guys, I'm kind of a lone wolf here in this one, but I just don't see it happening. I do not see a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Mainly because I don't see any payoff. What's the big payoff? The country's a basket case. It's corrupt. It's infested with international elves now who are really doing their best to convert the culture into, you know, sort of this, you know, being a member of the global homo empire. So it really is sort of a culture war going on inside Ukraine. And I think the real game here is, you know, I don't think there's going to be this big invasion. I just don't see it. I could be wrong. But what I think the game really is here is to have some minor skirmishes, a bunch of propaganda, and then the United States and parts of Europe are going to, you know, do sanctions on the Russians. And, of course, the end result will be much higher gas prices. What is exactly the plan, you know, there to get the new Green Deal moving along here, right? I think that's what's going on. I don't see a Russian invasion. And, you know, it is part of the fake news stories that the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media or the oligarch media are showing us. They're saying, oh, Russia supposedly shelled a kindergarten in Ukraine. And it's like, really? Like, of all the buildings in Ukraine, a kindergarten gets hit? Come on, guys. This obviously is staged to evoke emotions. Oh, my God. Kindergartners, little children are being shelled by the evil Russians or fill in the blank, whatever bad guy you want to have there. And if you look at the photos of that kindergarten that was supposedly shelled, doesn't really look believable to me, because the problem I have with the photograph is if you look on the outside of the building, you know, all of this cement is, you know, blown up, peeled away, but the brick underneath isn't damaged at all except for the little hole. This doesn't look right to me. It looks like a staged scene all the way there. And the other thing is, you know, I think Putin is too smart to take the bait. You know, I don't think he's going to be stupid enough to hug that tar baby, the tar baby of Ukraine. But they're saying on the, you know, enemy press that he's going to invade Kiev. Oh, really? That would be colossally stupid. But if it did happen, if I was in some position of power, which I'm not, of course, I would say, well, hey, good luck. You're going to need it. Let's let the Russians and the Ukrainians work this out on their own, see what happens. But if Putin does invade Ukraine, which is possible, I suppose, but I just don't see it, it shows to me that he's sort of playing a role on a stage. You know, a world leader, maybe just an actor on a stage. Because I don't see the benefit at all for him or Russia. And of course, you know, what's interesting too is all the Russian demands are perfectly reasonable to not have essentially enemy war forces called NATO up against their border. This whole thing is just incredibly absurd that we're supposed to believe any of this those evil Russians, you know, it's getting old. So that's my prediction. I don't see there being a big war. And all this talk about, 700,000 refugees are fleeing to Russia. I don't see any evidence of that. I'm sure some have, but it's not anywhere close to that number. I mean, think about the logistics of 700,000 people. That's a lot of buses to get across the border, you know? And of course, if Putin did invade, he'd be taking on the role of a modern day Hitler, the ultimate evil, right? But that's the role he'd be taking on. And I don't think he's going to hug that tar baby. And of course, we know Adolf Hitler wasn't the ultimate evil. In fact, almost everything we know about World War II has been a lie. It's really incredible. Almost everything, guys, including the very beginning of the story for America. You know, the part where America was sneak attacked by the Japanese. Without any foreknowledge, innocent America was attacked by the Yellow Menace. And of course, that story does not hold water. And, you know, over the last week here, I've been reading an incredible book on the subject of Pearl Harbor. And it's entitled Day of Deceit by Robert Stennett. Day of Deceit by Robert Stennett. And guys, this book proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that not only, you know, did the Roosevelt administration know an attack was coming, but they actually did everything they could to force Japan into having no choice but to attack by cutting off all of their access to fuel, all of their access to steel, messing with their trading partners, and even putting American ships, popping up in Japanese territorial water. And what's amazing about this book is it takes these concepts and, you know, these ideas that essentially Pearl Harbor was a false flag. It takes it out of the realm of conspiracy theory and into the realm of hard-hitting historical fact. There really is no denying it after you read this book, guys. And apparently this book took over 7 years to write, which I believe because this book makes its point. It proves its case with primary source documents, you know, from letters and writings by the people who were actually involved, you know, archived documents from the government itself admitting what actually happened that were attained by FOIA requests over a period of 7 years, and also archives and university libraries and the Library of Congress. It's really amazing. And of course, you know, Roosevelt wanted war with the Axis powers, partly because his administration was packed to the rafters with communist Jews. And that's not anti-Semitism, guys. That's just a statement of fact. But yeah, I'd check out that book, Day of Deceit. It takes all of this out of the realm of conspiracy theory. It really does. And if you think about it, guys, you know, who was the big winner of World War II? Communism. That was the big winner. Communism. And really, it's hard to believe America was actually fighting on the side of the communists. That's really what was going on. It's just amazing. Yeah, so I'd get a copy of that book if you're so inclined to read that kind of stuff, Day of Deceit by Robert Stennett. And this book, of course, was recommended to me by none other than the rebel madman himself, Mr. Mike Gatti, who will be coming on next hour as part of a roundtable discussion beginning in hour number two. Got a big lineup of top ranked minds here to have a discussion. Blackbird 9, Daryl Wayne, Gertchen, Steve from the UK, Paul English, and Breiser, and maybe a few other people popping in. We'll see. So yeah, guys, get ready for that. Coming up in hour number two and hour number three, all part of the 100th episode celebration. Yeah. And I saw a little kind of interesting story in the Oligarch Press or the Enemy War Transmissions about the future that they have planned, that they want to tell us about anyway. And it was this story about automated supermarkets, the supermarket of the future. It's already planned out, guys. And, of course, it was all, you know, sort of presented as something wonderful. And basically, in the supermarket of the future, you gain access to the supermarket with your cell phone. Oh, yeah, you have to scan one of those scan codes, whatever they call them, those, that box with all the weird dots on it. You got to scan that to get in the store. And you know, I find that scan code thing just, you know, offensive visually. It's so ugly and so alien looking. Nothing human looking about it. And, you know, I don't want any part of it. It's really annoying if you go to a restaurant and they're like, oh, here, scan this code to see the menu. I'm like, no, how about you bring me a menu? Thanks, though. Appreciate that. To me, it's just something totally alien and something to, you know, bring us into this bizarre reality. So, yeah, in the fully automated supermarket, you enter the building with your phone, and then, you know, you take stuff off the shelf with your phone, and, of course, you pay with your phone, all part of this sort of digital dollar they want to bring about very soon. And in this story, the owner of the supermarket of the future was a black couple. So the implication is if you don't like this idea, then you're racist, you're a bad person. But here's the important part, guys. Guess what? The store was funded by a grant from Microsoft. Oh, yeah, a grant from Microsoft. So, again, we have these, you know, technocratic oligarchs funding businesses and pushing certain business models. Yet we're supposed to believe we live in this free market. It's all such a facade, isn't it, guys? And, of course, I believe Bill Gates to be a crypto Jew. Every day he looks a little bit more like Woody Allen. And he's a bizarre character. There's something really wrong with this guy. If you just watch his body language and his strange facial tics he has, a very odd man. God only knows what he's involved in behind closed doors. So yeah, this automated supermarket was creepy. And of course, you know, they could actually deny you access to the store. Very easily, you know, if your phone doesn't have the right code and, you know, you don't score high enough on your whatever social credit score, you can't come in. Yeah, I could just hear the little scientific HAL 2000 voice. I'm sorry, Dave, but you can't enter the store. Please go home and starve to death. Thank you. Oh, guys, it's not that far away. And I guess, like, the final thing I want to bring up here, you know, it's another story that's quite dubious as to whether or not it's real. In fact, I know it's not real. And it's always interesting how whenever we see these attempts to manipulate reality and through lies and to manipulate reality into a strange dystopic fashion. There always seems to be a Jewish guy involved somewhere lurking in the background. You know, just like with this whole Ukraine mess, every single person that's negotiating on the part of the United States just happens to be an international elf. You know, Blinken, that Mary Sherman woman, and Victoria Nuland, and there's a few other guys too. It's really pathetic. But there's always seems to be a, you know, a international elf lurking in the background behind the curtain with these manipulations. And with this story, well, it's good news really, because guess what, guys? We're going off into space further than we've ever been since the moon landing. Oh, yeah. And, of course, this Jewish billionaire, Jared Isaacman, is behind it. And it's interesting because the, you know, the big headline is that we're going to go deeper into space than we've gone since the last Apollo moon mission in 1972. Another thing that probably didn't happen. There's so many holes in that story, it's not even funny. So, yeah, we're going to go deeper into space than we have since 1972. But then later on, they admit that they're only going to go 300 miles up. 300 miles, that's not very far when what the moon is supposedly 238,000 miles from Earth. So we should all be asking ourselves, well, if we really went to the moon in 1972, 238,000 miles from Earth, why is it we're going 300 miles up now? You know, almost, what, 50 years later? I mean, what's going on with that? But of course, you know, they conveniently lost all the plans for the rockets and the, you know, the Ilium and all the, oh, we lost the plan. Sorry. We'd like to show them to you, but somehow we lost all of them. Sorry about that. Even though it was supposedly like what the most, important things, you know, humans have ever done in history, going to the moon. Oh, we lost all that stuff. Sorry. No biggie. Yeah. Yeah. It's, pretty suspicious, guys. And, you know, if you look at all the footage of Sir Richard Branson going into space with a couple hundred miles up is all they did. Well, I'm not even convinced that happened because the footage they show, it's just, it looks strange. It looks like CGI. Maybe they did go up a couple hundred miles. Who knows? I don't know. But why are we only going a few hundred miles up 50 years later if we really went to the moon? And of course, part of the game here is to keep us looking up into, you know, outer space, whatever that really is. We don't even know. And instead of looking beneath our feet, because there's incredible things happening right beneath our feet on this Earth, everything from what massive underground cities, Mount Weather, for example, that's absolutely provable that exists, complete with malls and a post office, an office of the presidency, and lots of storable food. That's all easily provable. And, of course, there's endless access to both water and oil under there, too. Endless. But we're not supposed to know about that. Think about going up into the space with what Jared Jewstein, right? That's the important thing. We're going to go to space with Mr. Jewstein. Yeah. Something to think about, guys. There's always a international elf behind the curtain in these deceptive stories, these manipulations of our minds. And of course, really that began in earnest, what, over 100 years ago with Eddie Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud. Yeah, what a pernicious influence it all is. And that said, I would like to bring on my co-host and partner in crime, Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals, but he won't be there much longer. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
Welcome to a century of Scorpio. Hey, man, congratulations on show number 100. Who would have thunk it that you have beaten back the international elves, especially Jared Justine, who has vowed to try and take Operation Scorpio off the ether.
Right. Yes. After he conquers space and, you know, what do you think about this? Doesn't it strange? I mean, let's, you know, for anyone that believes we went to the moon, you know, I don't have absolute proof we didn't, but it seems unlikely to me, at least with the story they told us. Why are we going 300 miles into space when they already went, you know, 238,000 miles to the moon? Well, why are we doing that 50 years later? What's the answer for that?
Yeah, man, that is yet another day of deceit. That's it. I mean, yeah, and they found these videotapes a few months back that talked about everything, how they did it, but then they destroyed it because, you know, it's such a lie. And that book, Day of Deceit, years ago I researched, probably decades ago, the whole Pearl Harbor lie. And you know what else is factual proof is they tried to make a patsy out of the Navy admiral who was in charge there, and he sued and won in a court of law proving that he was not responsible and that they had prior knowledge. And the media covers that all the time, right?
Right, right. And, you know, the reason I think that Day of Deceit is such an important book is that, you know, it's full of primary source research. And so there's really no way you can read this book and intellectually be honest and say, oh, that's just a bunch of theories. I mean, this proves it with, you know, absolute proof from all these official sources. There's no denying that. And, you know, of course, they broke the Japanese codes, you know, almost a year before, 6 months or so before the so-called attack. And, you know, the book even documents Roosevelt, you know, openly admitting he wanted to go to war and was just looking for an excuse, and even admitted to some of his aides on a campaign stop that, well, if we're attacked, it's not our fault, something like that, you know. So, you know, and of course, at the time, here's another important little fact, that 88% of the American public was dead against being involved in World War II. They wanted nothing to do with it, partly because the, you know, the memory of World War I, that horrible, pointless meat grinder, was only, you know, 20 years in the past. So the memory was well implanted, and nobody wanted anything to do with it.
Well, you know, if you do original source historical research, like the great rebel madman Mike Gatty, you'll find that both in Rothschild Bankster War I and Rothschild Bankster War II, there was an overwhelming majority of people not wanting the United States to get involved in that war. I mean, at first it was 90% polling, and then they managed to slowly bring it down. And what a farce.
Yeah. And even what, you know, the PNAC documents talked about how they needed a new Pearl Harbor, which, you know, manifested as 9/11.
Yep.
So this is an old trick. It's been used many times before. And, you know, I don't know if you saw the photograph of that kindergarten. Of course, it was a kindergarten of all the buildings in Ukraine. Let's bomb a kindergarten. You know, the photo of it, just to me, you know, I'm not an expert in military explosions. I'll have to ask Mike. Maybe he's seen that photograph, see mm-hmm. what he thinks.
Right.
But it just looked to me like they taken a sledgehammer and peeled away all the cement on the outside of the building and then made a hole in the wall. And because all the bricks around, you know, where the cement was supposedly blown off are completely undamaged. I mean, they're this doesn't look right to me.
Oh, I have not seen the picture, but the way you're describing it sounds like a classic staged photo op. And that's, you know, like you said, the internationalist elves, especially coming out of Israel, are dead set on having some type of hot war over the Ukraine. Cause they, you know, for a fact, as do I, that they've been saying, for months now that they want Ukraine to be the second Israel, that, that Jews can go back and forth without a passport. So there, it's amazing what these parasites do. They just never quit. You know, I mean, it's like, just unbelievable. I was listening to Blackbird Nine's, Breakfast Club from Wednesday last night when I was doing some show prep for your stuff, making the episode 100 that's displaying on the screen. And he brought out the point that, you know, Martin Luther totally tried to convince the Jews to turn away from Satan and embrace, the divine. And he found that they could not be redeemed. And so he said, you know, so Martin Luther was a smart guy. And that's what's so sad about the modern world now is these satanic parasites. They're a cancer into everything. And yet, you know, if you're to believe, they control the lying media, they control the lying government, they control lying big pharma, they control, parasitic usury, they control lying academia, gaslighting academia, they control big war, they control big chemical, they control big agra. It's unbelievable. And yet their worldwide population, 0.0023, percentage of the American population, barely 2%. And why do we allow this cancer to metastasize into countries that should be, you know, humanist, God-fearing European nations? Instead, we're subjected to the flotsam and jetsam. I mean, making, you know, a tranny an important element to our society is just beyond absurd. I mean, they have every right in their mental illness to dress up like a woman, or a woman dress up and pretend they're a man, but they're not. They are what they are. And if they weren't so psychologically weak, mentally weak, spiritually weak, what's the other one? I can't think of it. You get my point. If they just could accept who they are and have some type of spiritual practice, they would know that the soul is eternal and this life is the test. Instead, they mutilate themselves. And these low-life shitheads like the MMA man who puts on heavy makeup and goes in and breaks women's jaws competing in the women's, and this goofy bunghole who puts on a bikini and swims against women and now is the number one woman swimmers. This is ludicrous. This is insane. This is just, okay, you wanna be a cross-dresser or a tranny, whatever, you know, knock yourself out, free will, free, but do it on the fringes where you belong, not in mainstream society, not on television, and certainly not influencing impressionable young toddlers and children to, oh, you're going to be a girl now, Johnny. I mean, that is so evil. It's beyond, it's unspeakable.
Well, it is. It's child abuse, and it's sort of a method to prime the pump of our civilization into destruction by filling people's minds with bad ideologies and systems that don't work on purpose. And that's how you conquer a people from within,
right?
Is to fill their minds with garbage.
I don't know if you saw it, Scorpio, I don't know if you saw this week, a couple days ago, someone who warned about this since the 80s, the brilliant and courageous Charlotte Thompson Iserby died. And so she died like 4 days ago. She was warning about this since the 80s when she was assistant, secretary of education or something pretty high up. And she saw everything that was going on. Yeah. So she passed, sadly. God bless her.
Wow. I did not know that. That's a shame. She really sort of spearheaded the effort to expose the intentional dumbing down of America since the 80s, as you said. And, you know, her father was a Skull and Bones member. So,
oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes, he was. And she inherited some of his books and papers and stuff. So I think that was sort of the seed for her to realize, wait a minute, this is a plan. And so, you know, she was quite courageous. And her book is amazing.
It is.
Intentional dumbing down of America.
And she did some great interviews with – the great Jeff Renz, whose signature wears that muskrat pelt on his head.
Yeah. I did not know that. That's sad. Well, she was certainly someone that stood her ground and stayed consistent for over 40 years. It's really amazing.
It is
really
amazing. True that. Yeah.
And you know, I want to thank people in the chat room, both in Revolution Radio and on Twitch and the other sources here. Some great discussions going on. It's just, you know, people were talking about the Pearl Harbor and how, Admiral Richardson was, you know, sort of the in charge of the Pacific fleet, and you know, the ships were only brought to Pearl Harbor as part of an exercise or a training mission. Does it sound familiar? And they were supposed to go right back, and you know, Richardson wanted that to happen, and Roosevelt forced him to keep the fleet in Pearl Harbor because he said, "This is a disaster. We can't do this. This is insane."
Exactly.
This is all in, you know, in the Day of Deceit book. And from his actual writings and letters and logs of conversations, and you know, against the warning of like, hey, this is going to be a disaster. What are you doing? They moved forward with war. And again, it's just another example of how even the top military people, because there was a lot more, you know, patriots at the top at that time, than there are now.
Yes.
This guy just protested and actually lost his career over it. He was relieved of command later.
Right. I mean, the facts are there, but you know, the indoctrinated, entrained, entranced, normies don't like to deal with facts. They like to deal with feelings. The feels. Oh, the Japanese, they'd sneak attack this. Oh, it makes me feel angry. I'm a patriot. I mean, come on. Are you a 4-year-old? Maybe you are.
Yeah. And, you know, that's right. You know, that with the relentless propaganda, the yellow menace, you know, just ginning up with the Huns and the evil Germans. And now we're seeing the same propaganda again directed towards Russia. And it's interesting how when the Soviet Union was in existence, there wasn't that much propaganda against them by the left. And now that Putin is in charge, it's just this constant barrage of hatred. It really truly is hate.
Yep.
Towards Russia. And, you know, I just watched a little bit of the clips of the Olympics, which is probably the worst Olympics ever in so many different ways. But they were saying how it's just so unfair how the Russians put all this pressure on their athletes that aren't even, you know, 18 years old. It's just horrible. But, of course, you know, we don't do that. Only the evil Russians. So the propaganda, I guess my point is the propaganda has filtered all the way down into the Olympics. And, of course, the reporter on this was Jewish. You know, so it's really incredible.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah, that's unwatchable to me now. I mean, I was so turned off like a decade ago when I remember watching that. Now we know the Hidden Hand was previewing the COVID scamdemic a decade earlier with that. They had the actual corona so-called molecule in giant size, and it had the dying patient in the bed in that bizarre Olympic opening or closing scene. And I was like, this is so bizarre. I don't even want to watch this crap anymore. Cause I could sense something was weird about all that. It's like, what is any business of this at the Olympics? But now we know exactly what the business was in their dark rituals. They have to tell you ahead of time in their minds. Otherwise they feel it blows back on them and they don't want blowback.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the weaponization of everything.
Right.
Is really what we're seeing. You can weaponize anything, including the Olympics.
Yep.
And that's exactly what's happened. And here, you know, really, it was this showcase of China, even though China had the Olympics in 2008. And yet we pick the ugliest possible scene possible with a nuclear power plant looming in the background right behind the ski slope. I mean, could it get any worse? You know, and I think we're seeing no one wants to watch it anymore because they're destroying it with, like they have so many other things with their, you know, get woke propaganda. Nobody wants to hear it. It's not an ideology that most people want, yet it's being forced upon us by a foreign parasitical source.
That's so true, Dave. So true. And, you know, getting back to your excellent insights regarding Canada. It's like, I could not believe that footage. I knew it was coming. I didn't know they'd do it with horses and trampling people, but I knew they were going to do something. I mean, look at what they did in Australia with that type of energy weapon that burned all these people. I mean, the only thing I can hope is that the Canadians and Australians, we've saying it forever, the great silent majority has had enough. And if they truly wake up, if I hope in Canada, this trucker protest is just the first wave and they drive out that, parasitic illegitimate son of Fidel Castro, Fidelita, not Fidelito, cause it's a, you need a feminine end to that name, cause he is just a pussy, a faggot. I mean, there's no way around that. I mean, what a scumbag. And of course he's propped up to be prime minister. That guy's got no business. I mean, talk about nepotism, you know, I mean, what a laugh. And people, now is desperately the time to wake up and see that these Satanists, this evil cannot remain in power, and the great silent majority has to do what they need to do to take back their nations.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, in one way, this is a loss, because as I understand it, the protest is essentially over, and, you know, they're always going to make an example out of these sort of things. Anyone who resists the Borg is going to be made an example of. But it may be a loss in that sense, but in a more subtle way, it's a victory in a way, because we're going to see the seething hatred towards this government and towards the system that we're forced to live under. And I think that's going to be something that's hard to go away. And if these people think that, well, okay, we're going to bring them this new system because we made you hate the old system, I don't think very many people are going to be like, yeah, let's have a new system run by the same exact people. That's a great idea. You know, I don't think that's going to fly so well.
Oh, excellent point. And, you know, I don't know that I necessarily agree that it was a loss, because anyone, you had to understand that protest and choking off the entry and exit points was not going to last forever, because the truckers still got to feed the people. They still got to do what they got to do. The fact that they maintained it so long, and that it took the government was afraid to come in immediately and exhibit totalitarian dictatorial powers, showed how weak they really are. And you're absolutely right that this, I think this is a victory and a turning point. And I think that you're going to see Justine Fidelita out within 6 months.
Well, I agree with what you're saying. Yeah, I agree. It's just, I meant it's a loss because the protests got broken up. But yeah, everything you're saying is true. And I think this undercurrent of disdain towards the people in power is only going to grow, and this is going to backfire. Everything they do is going to backfire at this point. That's the thing. Exactly.
Yep. Yep.
And you talk about bad optics. You had, you know, two little old ladies trampled by imperial stormtroopers. I mean, that does not look good. No matter how much they want to spin it.
That just enraged me. And it was so, you know, it's really sad that the level of indoctrination into these low intellect police and military types is so effective. I mean, what real man in their right mind is going to ride horses into a peaceful protest and trample grandmothers? I mean, that is not a man. That is a subhuman operative, you know, like in The Lord of the Rings, like literally an orc. It's unbelievable.
Exactly. That's a very orcish behavior. I agree.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think a lot of things they're going to do are going to simply backfire, and the disdain and hatred towards the ruling elite is only going to grow.
Yep.
And I don't, people are saying, well, they want to do this on purpose so they can bring the new system in. Yeah, but it, you know, if it's the same oligarchs bringing the new system, it's not going to play well. And this is why they want to, you know, why they did this whole phony play of, you know, January 6th insurrection.
Yep.
It was sort of a preemptive strike against what's coming, which is going to be a lot of discontent.
What a brilliant observation. That is exactly right. They understood how, you know, like the protocols always say, we're going to foment people so they're asking us for globalist government. And what a brilliant point, Dave, that the American mind rapists are probably the most sophisticated because it's all Dewey Justine's doing it. And so they knew that, it takes a while to get Americans riled up, but once they do, it's not going to be good for them. And so that was, they laid the groundwork to be able to savagely suppress it. It won't work. I mean, once the silent majority, says enough is enough, there is no ruling, there is no government power that can stop that. So that's what we're going to see, I think.
Right. Yeah. Because, brutally, you know, breaking up, peaceful protests, it's a difficult position to be in. And that's why they waited so long to do it, because it, you know, it looks bad and it's going to backfire. Yeah. So it's interesting. As I say, may you live in interesting times.
Right.
You certainly do.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. Yep. So how does it feel to have 100 shows under your belt?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to let the taste of victory, sink in deeper, but I'm just really looking forward to our coming roundtable discussion hour two and hour three. We really do have sort of like a super crew of big brains to create, you know, sort of an underground think tank here. So I'm interested to see where the conversation is going to go.
Oh, it'll be great. Yeah. There's a lot of minds I admire about to join the show in about 12, 15 minutes for sure.
Yeah. So, it's just amazing, Giuseppe, you know, every event that we're supposed to react to is being spun and manipulated.
Yep.
And I think the question is, when do we just decide to no longer, you know, participate and create new systems and new ways of human interaction, and a real freedom? I mean, how much longer are people going to hold on to this notion that we can reform the government, just get the right people in there, some people think we can do that, but I think we're past that. The whole structure is the problem, and the whole structure is there to promote centralized control of people's behavior, what they think, and you've got these intelligence agencies that are embedded into every aspect of life, covertly, of course.
Yep.
You know, they're in academia much more than people think. My, I had a close family relative that was, in the underwater demolition team, and later, actually, he worked for NASA too, and then became a professor in academia. And, he told me flat out that he knew for a fact that there was, CIA agents in his department that he was in, and in every department in the university. And, he told me that back in the, late 1980s, you know, so imagine where it is now.
Oh yeah. I mean, the hidden hand has been, powerful for millennia, but it's really changed the last 40 years, beginning in the 80s, where they're so brazen in their beliefs. They have it all locked down, and maybe they do. I don't think so, but they believe it, and they no longer operate in the shadows. That is a disturbing phenomenon, but maybe like when we had David Icke on last year, maybe that's a good thing. You know, like you said, the hidden hand is in the room and the door is closed behind him. And so now, I mean, you know, where's the warrior class? Those are your targets.
Right. Well, Giuseppe, what do you think? Do you think we're going to have a, you know, war with Russia and Ukraine, or do you think this is all just a lot of, talk? And, part of the game too is just having one crisis after another to keep the public traumatized,
yep,
to keep the mind in the trauma state, perpetually. But do you think this is going to manifest? Cause I think the real game here is sanctions and higher fuel prices pushing the green agenda. I think that'll be the first question I ask the panel, but what are your thoughts?
Well, that's a good question. I think that the globalist Rothschild minions are really, really desperate for a hot war somewhere, right? Could be China over Taiwan, They really want to punish Russia because of their blood libel against the czars who blocked, along with Germany back in the late 19th century, the global banking system and the New World Order that the Jewy Jewsteins were seeking to implement then. And so I think that something is going to happen. There's too many smoldering embers, and the world is a dry forest right now. So I think that something will happen. I mean, I hope it turns out to be a proxy conflict, not World War III, because World War III is a loss for every human on this planet.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, I do think that a war is coming. I just don't think they're quite prepared on all sides for it yet. But what we're seeing is sort of, first of all, getting the pieces on the board moved in the right positions, right, and getting it in our minds that a conflict is coming. So when it does happen, it's like, oh yeah, 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 of course. It's been brewing for almost a year or whatever, you know? And, but I do think one interesting thing is, I think that if you look at it from the point of view of, say, Russia and China, if they opened a two-front war at the same time, if you had, you know, Russia, you know, moving into Ukraine and then China moving into Taiwan at the same time, the West would be paralyzed. They wouldn't be able to do a damn thing about it.
Right.
And I think that might be the scenario that actually kicks things off for real. Because I think, you know, Albert Pike, you know, predicted this third war.
Right.
In letters he wrote to the head of Freemasonry in Italy. So we'll see. But the other factor here is that supposedly, you know, Russia and China are both building up their armies and their navies very, very rapidly. But I think China says it'll be finished constructing its navy in 2026. And I think Russia said somewhere around the same time their buildup of armaments will be complete. So maybe it pushes the war back somewhere to, you know, the next couple of years. We'll see. I don't know. I don't have I have a crystal ball, but it's not always accurate.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Sometimes it's a little cloudy. I agree with everything you said. I mean, they have to have a global conflict. Yep. Here we go.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
What the heck is the Truth Jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
A little honey on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed dirty Don McGee on the lone highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, welcome back to Operation Scorpio, hour number two, 100th edition, and for the following, or the next 2 hours, we're going to have quite a think tank of great minds, hopefully, sort of an underground think tank here to unravel the mysteries of this world, and it is my great pleasure to introduce and welcome Blackbird 9. Gertchen, Paul English, Mike Gaddy, the Rebel Madman, Daryl Wayne, and Breiser are all aboard and ready to get down and dirty. We'll see. And guys, just I want to thank everyone for coming on. And I guess my first question I want to pose to the panel is this notion of, you know, the great coming war in Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine. And as I sort of stated in the beginning of my monologue, I don't think it's going to happen yet. I think this is really all about getting sanctions on Russia and thus driving up gas prices and pushing the new Green Deal. We have no choice but to go green because of international conflicts. But I do think a war is coming. I just don't think we're there quite yet. So I want to get everyone's take on this because this is the big story being pushed by our enemy media, the enemy war transmissions. So maybe I'll just go kind of in order that I see on the screen here. Blackbird 9, you're at the top of the list. Welcome, sir, and what are your thoughts about Ukraine and evil Russia?
Greetings, good sir. It's quite the honor to be part of this panel, this think tank today, and congratulations on the 100th show milestone. That is most impressive, good sir.
So, oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. But I guess, you know, I just would like to say that, to paraphrase Monty Python, I think wrong-thinking people are right. So... with Russia, Yeah, you really wonder, is this just the distraction play? You know, is this the end game? Are we moving into the end game scenario? Is this, you know, Putin reclaiming Ukraine and saying, yeah, that's part of Russia, that's part of Mother Russia, the way China looks at Taiwan. And we look at, you know, the role of Soros, you know, George Soros, that created this new Ukraine in, what, 2004 with the orange color revolution, right? And right. left all these chicken swingers in charge of the country that are basically setting up, you know, this, you know, turning all the, you know, white, you know, Ukrainians into Palestinians. And this is just kind of a repeat of the Holodomor because, you know, the, part of the end game of the Zionist model is if Israel folds, our backup plan is to go to Ukraine. That's going to be little Israel over there or Patagonia in South America, right? So right. just, you know, those are just some of my, you know, first thoughts on the matter. So I'll, you know, turn it back over to you.
Okay, great. Excellent points. Excellent points. Gertchen, what are your thoughts, sir? Welcome to the show. And what are your thoughts on evil Russia and the innocent, wonderful Ukrainians? You're muted, Gertchen. There we go.
There we go. Congratulations on your 100th program. I wore my festive tie for the occasion. This is a great achievement. Thank you. And hello, Giuseppe. And I can't read. Who did we just hear from?
That Blackbird was Blackbird 9. Frederick,
Blackbird. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Well, thanks for having me on the show. My opinion. Yeah, I think it's very funny to see how the United States embassy was emptying out and all the little rats were fleeing. And then Russia said, ha ha, fooled you. I had to laugh when I when that happened. But bottom line, really, to put this whole thing into a perspective, we're completely on the wrong energy paradigm. And that is a big part of the problem globally. If we were on a cannabis hemp paradigm for energy, realize that a cannabis hemp plant can grow 15 feet in 6 months. And 75% of the biomass turns to seed, which produces a fantastic biodegradable fuel for cars, engine oil, even you can cook. It's the most complete vegetable protein on the planet. And, of course, we know that the international cabal of chicken swingers basically demonized that in 1937 so that the Jewish DuPont family could secure the rights for synthetic cellulose. And then, you know, of course, with Standard Oil and so forth, the international parasite has taken control of the planet's energy. And as a result of that, they've got us, yeah, I guess the pun is intended, over a barrel. And that is a fundamental part of the problem. People are being hosed by the entity for energy costs. And that's why this whole Nord Stream issue is such an important one over there in Ukraine and Russia and so forth. Knowing the history of Russia somewhat, do realize that a large percentage of the Ukrainian population are actually German Russians or Russian Germans that were sent there by Catherine the Great to develop the farms there that were so possible in what has become or was for a long time, you know, the major grain producer for Europe and other places. And so Ukraine also strategically is an extremely important place, but fundamentally the Ukrainian people have a very strong genetic tie to Russia. And gosh, you know, I don't, you know, looking at the way Russia is, even though we know Vladimir Putin has been seen wearing a kippah, just like Donald Trump has been seen wearing a kippah, just like we see Justin Trudeau wearing blackface. Yeah, we've seen him with a kippah, you know. But what we are seeing right now is the final face-off for humanity and it's taking place right now in Ottawa. And there are, you know, possible conflicts developing in Ukraine, but the Russians are not stupid. And like I say, I think they were just kind of playing chicken for a while just to see what the American, what NATO's response would be. And given that Russia is taking a bit of a more aggressive stance, it totally stands to reason. I mean, Russia is almost entirely surrounded now by agents, by minions of the international parasite trying to take over the planet. So, you know, I would see that as a bit of an affront, just yeah. like the Americans would think it an affront if there was a massive pileup of Mexicans. Well, there is a massive pileup of Mexicans on the border. Do you come to think of it? Uh-huh. Yeah. We are at war, guys, and it's coming at us from many fronts. And bottom line, it's a war against the white race. We are being chemtrailed, we're being poisoned, we're being destroyed, and the minions of the enemy are marching on the people, and that is a major symbolic occurrence now in Ottawa, and I suggest everybody pay attention.
Yes.
Yeah. My suggestion to the truckers is to take a lesson from history. You know, there's all this peace, love, and sticking roses into the barrels of the guns that are wielded by these automatons. You got to realize a police officer is a policy enforcement unit. And the moment they become that, they're entities of a corporation because policies are the rules of corporations. Governments make laws. And so all these automatons, they now marching against their own people, have totally sold their soul and all this talk of peace, love. And so they can no longer fathom that because they have no soul.
Right.
They cannot interact with the idea of love. So my suggestion to the truckers is go bowling. If you get my drift.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, we are at war. How many more millions of us does the entity get to kill and maim? I mean, I'm really pissed off right now, actually, quite frankly, especially since I learned again, yet another victim of the Jew jabs, a lovely 20-year-old girl. Her whole life was ahead of her. She was a model. She was going to be a model. You imagine. Both her legs had to be amputated after she received the Jew jab.
My God, that's terrible.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's terrible. Well, a great historical perspective, too, on the sort of the history of Ukraine and the makeup of the people there. I want to move on to Mr. Paul English, a truly great thinker and an eloquent man. Paul, what is your take on Ukraine and the coming possibility of a World War III or not?
Your invitation, Dave, didn't say anything about doing any thinking tonight.
Yeah, I was misleading. About that.
Yeah, you've shocked me. It's Saturday night. It's Saturday nights when I don't do any thinking. I try to not do too much of that. No, good points there raised by both Blackbird and Gertchen. And yes, congratulations on 100 shows. So this is a lot of shows. I was hoping that there might be 100 people here behind the microphones. I thought that might be quite interesting. I didn't know quite how many were going to be here. It's all a bit of a surprise, isn't it? But the Ukrainian thing, I mean, I'm not going to profess to be an expert on it. I think I know pretty much what most of us are likely to know about the history of that country, that they welcomed the Germans in with open arms at the time because they were under the cudgel of communism, so that makes sense. And yet they are connected to the Russian people. The other thing, of course, is the fall of the wall. And ever since that moment, really, so-called U.S. international policy, I'm saying it's so-called because it's really got very little to do with the people of the United States, of course. But that policy has been basically, as Gertchen was saying, to hem in, encircle, and nibble away at Russia in all sorts of ways. And, of course, they wheel them out as the golem du jour, don't they, whenever they want to, the monster that they're going to wheel out. Russia's going to get you and it's going to do this and everything. So they're portrayed in this way consistently. And yet I find, and I think most of us here obviously don't find that much of that portrayal sticks. It's rather comical, actually, although we still don't know. I don't know where it's all going. The other point as well is the energy aspect that Gertchen mentioned, and also everything tied up with the monetary mess at the moment. Well, it's not really a mess. It's a mess from our point of view, I guess, from our end. But from their end, I think it's obviously well coordinated, or at least well planned out. It's going to get messy. But you've got all these aspects taking place whilst the disease is distracting everybody, which is really what it is. It's a great big fear-mongering distraction, one of many. Even this, you could say, is a bit of a distraction, the Ukraine thing.
Oh, yeah.
It just is. Let's wheel out something that we know will get everybody's attention regularly. Oh, we're going to be at war. Oh, that's shocking, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So, but the thing that I'm paying attention to at the moment, sort of in the background, which I've tended to look at mostly from this, not in any profoundly deep way, is just to do with what they're doing monkeying about with the money system. And you've got a situation over there in the States, I know, where people are just buying up houses, aren't they? There's apparently rivers of cash floating around. You put your house on the market and you get more money than you put it on for. And we've got something similar cropping up here. There's a company called WeBuyAnyHouse.com or something like that. They just step in, and I'm thinking, ooh, I wonder where all this money's coming from. Someone's earmarked this. Higher up the food chain, of course, it's been earmarked. And I suspect this is, you know, part and parcel of Uncle Klaus Schwab's great train set plan, which is, to move us to a position where we can only rent. So you sell your house, you think you've made a lot of money, but the next day the house prices have got up even further. At some point, people are going to get squeezed. They know what they're up to. I mean, and if you look at the last 30 years or so, you look at the way that they've used certain situations to absorb or increase money supply. There was credit cards in the 80s and the 90s. We had a property boom here in the 80s in the UK, which was organized. They're all organized, these things. Then we get credit cards. Then we get the dot-com boom in the early 2000s. We've had long-term management, of course, went pear-shaped in 2008. And, of course, the same people that organized that are the people behind all of this. But apparently they just made a mistake back then. And honestly, you can trust us. We're bankers, that kind of stuff. So I see the Ukrainian thing has been a part of all of this drama. It may turn out to be a very prominent part. And it's difficult to read all the players. I mean, like I said, I don't go out for a coffee with Vladimir Putin. I don't think anybody else here does. I don't know the guy really well, but I have a reasonably decent impression of him. And certainly he looks like the least worst option on the world stage of leaders at the moment. So I guess we'll have to see. But it's the fear-mongering distraction element that I think is the key thing. And it's to add to the woes and troubles of the average man in the street, who's obviously still very, very concerned and wants to wear a mask and everything and not drop dead from coughing his guts up, which, of course, is a nonsense. But there you go. So my take on it.
Yeah. Well, Paul, you have quite a way of painting a picture with words. You know, when you said monkeying about with the monetary system, I can just see a bunch of monkeys, you know, just playing around with flipping around dollar bills everywhere. That's great. Good perspective. Let's move on to Mike Gatti, the rebel madman himself, the man who recommended I read Day of Deceit, among other things. Mike, what is your take on the coming war with Ukraine or not? Is this another distraction, or what are we dealing with here? Go ahead, sir.
Well, congratulations on your 100th show, Joe, and it is a pleasure to be here with my fellow reprobates, as Paul English has referred to us. It is indeed a pleasure to be invited to be in this august group. But my thoughts on this Russia thing, thank you, BB9, is very simply looking at it from the design of a PSYOP. And initially going in, my thought is, if I'm running this PSYOP, is why should I worry about creating a war that destroys assets when I can get people to kill themselves with a jab and a mask?
And great point.
Much more efficient. But I have to keep Bubus Americanus sitting over here on the sidelines on the end of his chair worrying about, are we going to go to war? A war makes no sense for either side. We are definitely looking at mutually assured destruction. If one side starts, nobody wins. And I don't see the mini beanie chicken. Well, how do we say that, Blackbird Nine? The mini beanie chicken slingers. I don't see them wanting to destroy all these assets, because we're right in the middle, my opinion, of the largest wealth transfer in the history of the world.
Yep. Yeah.
And the funny guys are over there on the sideline, running the porn industry, running the pharmaceutical industry. And they're getting filthy rich. I don't see a war being an attribute to either side at this point. Certainly not to Mr. Putin, who has more brains than the Western Brain Trust put together.
Yes, I don't see the big payoff for Putin to hug that tar baby. I just don't see it. Great analysis, Mike. And, you know, I love your concept of why destroy assets when you can get people to kill themselves with an injection in wearing a mask. I think that really cuts through it. Let's move on to Daryl Wayne, the retired pilot and a man who has recently recovered from the dreaded COVID, but he's doing fine now. Didn't even have to go to the hospital or anything. Daryl, how are you, sir? And please give us your take on the coming war.
Well, thanks, Dave. I'm doing great, in some part due to you and your help. Congratulations on your century mark of shows. What? How much work did that take, right? So yeah, it's my privilege to be amongst a great assemblage of my fellows who are identified as thought criminals. My privilege. And on the matter of Ukraine, you know, I think Mike has brought this up several times with Don Meredith when he says, we're just going to keep running that play till somebody stops us, which is is a great quote. They're just running the same play again. It's, they made a movie about this, by the way. I'll take a little different tact on this. Great little movie. It actually sucked, but, it really lays out the, how the modus operandi works of the PSYOP that everybody's talking about here. It's called Wag the Dog. It has Dustin Hoffman and Robert De Niro in it. If you haven't seen it, you'll you'll identify what the game plan here is as far as misdirection. And you know, that's one of the very first aspects of warfare. Is it's not the very first, but it's one of the first. Intelligence is the first, and disorganizing your opponent is the second one. To disorganize their thoughts and their actions, and of course, this is what happens when you produce a Cloward and Piven overwhelming offense on multiple fronts. It overwhelms the senses, and a lot of people just shut down. You know, I don't really know where it's going to go. That would be just silly to predict it. It's exactly, I know where it's going to go, but what I can assure you is that all events are happening in the manner they're happening to promote the agenda and integrate all the different aspects of the different warfare fronts. And just a small comment on the Canadian truckers, well, they've, depending upon your point of view and strategy and warfare, I would say that they've already won and they can you know, retreat, if you will, or reorganize, do a strategic retreat and reorganize themselves. And they've won because they've done simply this. They made the tyrants act like tyrants.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a win. So that's a win. And, I'll just leave it at that.
Well, great points with the multiple fronts of warfare and sort of, you know, making the mask come off, so to speak, of the tyrants. That's exactly right. Very good points. Let's go on to Breiser, a man who just survived a brutal storm there in Ireland. And hopefully the roof is still on the house and the power is still on. Breiser, how are you, sir? And what is your take on, you know, the multiple distractions of Ukraine and the idea of war coming soon? Greetings, and please go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Scorpio. And again, congratulations on your 100th show. That's a great achievement. Well done. And it's great to hear be here amongst all these fellow haters. Great to talk to you guys. By the way, the storm wasn't as bad as we thought. It was pure fear porn again. You know, just the worst storm of the century. I think Paul would know the same because the UK got pretty bad. Well, allegedly got hit by this, but coastal areas in the country got it hit bad. But, you know, there was trees and power outages and stuff. But where I was, it was a nothing burger, to be quite honest with you. So there we go. So glad to say that everything is still standing around here anyway. With the Russia-Ukraine thing, this has been kind of bubbling for a long time now. And again, I think it's just another psyop. I actually think there's the green agenda is playing into this. They're actually, because Russia, as you know, has got this pipeline, the Nord Stream pipeline, which goes right through Ukraine, I believe, and into Europe, and it's ready to go. It's ready to be switched on, and Europe could get a clean, cheap supply of natural gas, which could last for a long, long time. And, but the thing is, you see, it's not green enough. So, and then I think the Americans want to send over to Europe, they want to send over this fracked gas, which is three or four times more expensive, you see. So there's a bit of, I think that comes into play here a bit too, you know. So, So that's where I think it's going, and nobody wants this. I mean, the Ukrainians don't want it. I believe it was one of the top guys in the Ukrainian parliament said that this is all fake news coming out of the U.S. media. So, you know, there's nothing happening. I heard this. I was on the UK column report of that one, which was interesting, you know. That was just, this is all fake news. And, yeah, there was that building you mentioned, Scorpio, the school building that was hit. I mean, that looked like nothing. And I agree with Daryl there about Wag the Dog, you know, that movie. It was all about a fake war, which was, I think, in Albania or somewhere like that. And it was all made up, you know. And I think this is what we could probably be seeing here, just kind of a fake war on its screens. And everyone thinking, oh, my God, the Russians are coming, you know. The Reds are coming, Reds under the bed and all this nonsense again, you know. So I think it's going to be a kind of a Cold War type situation again. But again, with regards to Putin, you know, I don't know if I can trust the guy or not, you know, but when you compare him to the Western leaders, he stands head and shoulders above the rest of them. I mean, you know, particularly if you compare him to the likes of Justin Trudeau, I mean, and what he's been doing over there in Canada. I mean, Christ, what's happened there in the last few days, you know, is just unreal. But I think this will just kind of play out a bit. I don't know where it's going to go. There's other flashpoints too. There's China and Taiwan. That's another interesting one that could kick off as well. I believe Israel are, you know, doing the usual stuff and provoking Syria again. They're doing stuff there as well. So there's all these potential little flashpoints. And I think that's where we're going to see these things go in the next few years, I think. But not a major scale war, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I do think, the green energy thing plays a role in this. And, you know, Russia has these ultra deep wells they've, drilled into to hit essentially, which is endless amounts of gas and oil with the abiotic oil theory. And you have to wonder why no one else in the Western world has emulated this obviously winning strategy. Again, let's talk about Mars and going up into outer space. Don't think about what's happening underground. But, you know, guys, just I want to briefly say, I think that's probably, if you put everyone's answer together, that's the best analysis I've heard on the situation anywhere. And so I want to thank everyone for that. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in, man? And where do you want to take this conversation? Go ahead, sir.
Well, first off, Paul English must be prescient because we've got 100 men. The San Francisco Gay Choir is about to join us to serenade us about why we should all take the Jew jab. And, oh, hold on. I'm hearing oh, so many have thrown clots and died that they can't do it. Oh, well, sorry, I tried at least. I think that aside from my bad joke, I think that my question for everyone is there seems to be a big shift in the scamdemic to COVID fear porn is now COVID's fear point porn. I'd like to hear everyone's thoughts on that, starting with you, Scorpio, the man of the hour.
Well, yeah, you know, I'll make a brief response because I want to let the panel do its thing. But, yeah, all of a sudden AIDS is coming back. It's just quite funny. And really, if you think about it, the whole COVID thing is sort of a replay of AIDS, because here you have the concept of asymptomatic disease was introduced with AIDS. Like, hey, you feel fine, you look fine, but oh, wait, you tested positive for AIDS. Sorry, pal, you're going to die. You better take these pills or you're going to die. And of course, it was the AZT that killed people. And we're seeing that now. You know, here we got, you look fine, you feel fine. Oh, you got COVID. You better get inside and, oh, take another booster shot, you know, or else you're going to die. So it's the same game, only they've expanded it to the entire world, entire population. And, but yeah, they're going to have an excuse as to why so many people are dropping dead. And I think it's because this jab, this injection of poison is destroying people's immune system, among other things. It's also causing blood clots and cancer and God only knows what else. So they're going to have multiple excuses as to why the narrative is coming apart at the seams. And AIDS is a good one because it's already deeply implanted in people's consciousness, just like the Russia thing is on the Ukraine issue. So that's my analysis. And let's go to, speaking of Russia, let's go to Blackbird 9. What's your take on Giuseppe's cogent question?
Oh, excellent points, everyone. Wow, this is incredible stuff. I have to sit here taking notes while everyone's talking. But, yeah, I just want to go back to the points we're making about the monopoly on the energy supply, and that if you go back in the history and look at the role Rockefeller played, you know, Rockefeller and Rothschild in the new petroleum industry, right? You know, Henry Ford was making gas, you know, cars, and, you know, suddenly we had this automotive industry that required petroleum products. But he was one of the people saying, well, we could also use the existing hemp production. And, you know, he actually made a car not only made out of hemp, but ran on hemp oil. And it was just this, you know, phenomenal thing. And, of course, Rockefeller and Rothschild said, oh, no, we can't have that. So, you know, you had this whole redesigning, and it was just the psych war of, you know, suddenly hemp is now marijuana and is outlawed by the federal government. And, you know, you've got fossil fuels. This thing is like it's not a natural process of the earth to create petroleum products. You know, now it's fossil fuels. It's a finite resource, you know, and so they're just rebranding all this stuff. And at the same time, they're rebranding medicine, you know, and it's like Rockefeller medicine. And, you know, now it's these white coats of Baphomet that, you know, they are the number one killers in the world. I mean, the FBI most wanted list, you could take, you know, Al-Qaeda and all these supposed other terrorist organizations, and they don't do nearly as much as those white coats do under the guise of helping you and providing you health care. And with this whole COVID 9/11 scam, it's let's take the common cold and regular flu season and weaponize it and psych these people into wearing masks that's going to give them carbon dioxide poisoning and oxygen deprivation. There was a report that just came out about how the 2 years of this has retarded childhood development by something like 67% in these Western countries. And so, you know, you see this whole weaponization of it, and you've got to suddenly get this jab from all these chicken swinger pharmaceutical companies. And, you know, that's what's killing people. So it's like problem, reaction, solution. And, you know, now it's the AIDS thing again, and, you know, the AIDS virus. And it's like, no, it was the treatment that is killing all these people. And so I always reminded of the old axiom of, you know, the doctor, you know, the operation was a success, but the patient died. And it's like, well, no, actually, that was the operation. But, you know, you're so stupid, you're going to thank me and give me all your money for killing your loved ones. So, you know, that's my take on this thing, is this is just, you know, weaponization, 5G warfare to destroy the existing systems in these Western countries. And you think, where is this really being pushed? It's all in these Western white nations that they want destroyed under the guise of the Great Reset. And they always talk about, you know, Klaus Schwab and the Great Reset and the New World Order. And, you know, this is just another means to the end. This is asymmetric warfare. And they've got Mockingbird Media out there. Like you said, wag the dog. Yes, that is it. You know, what's on that television is real. You know, people won't listen to people like me because if you're so smart, why aren't you on television, right? You know, so, you know, this is what we're up against. But, you know, thanks to the internet, at least we're able to have pockets of resistance in this information psychological warfare. So back to you.
Brilliant, just brilliant, Blackbird 9. I love the term, white coats of Baphomet. That's a keeper. That's really good. Yeah. Just brilliant. Gertchen, what's your take on AIDS and, the coming crisis and trying to cover up essentially what it is trying to cover up the, death from the Jew jab. What's your take, sir?
Well, what we are seeing is a whole lot of backtracking because the entire COVID narrative is unraveling. And my take about AIDS and all of that, it's a very unfortunate disease that afflicted not only homosexual people, but heterosexual people apparently as well. And Dr. Fauci has some kind of a connection with the development of that disease also. Yeah, I think it's just really sad how the white race is being exterminated in front of our very eyes. The Georgia Guidestones refers to reducing world population down to, what, 500 million or so? Yeah, but that is the total eradication of the white race, and the entity likes to hang on to the Negroes and perhaps the Orientals to some degree, but we are in their way, and we're being overtly mass murdered and have been for actually quite a long time. As far as the Jews' medicine industry is concerned, when you take a look at, for example, an opium seed pod, when an opium plant goes to seed, you could practically seed an entire acre with the amount of seeds that are in that pod. Same as I said about a marijuana plant, a 15-foot tree, 75% of its biomass, if it's a female, is seed. Well, that should be, it shows us clearly what God intends. Here are our natural medicines that are demonized and made illegal up until relatively recently. Now our government's making money off it. But, you know, if we were growing our own medicines in our own gardens, which we could certainly do, we could grow a coca leaf plant. We could grow, you know, opium poppies, Papaver somniferum, that's the genus. I guess that's the type of poppy seed you need. It's Papaver somniferum. And, it grows, anywhere pretty much. It blows in the air. Same with cannabis hemp. You know, we could be seeing fields and fields of cannabis, and then we would produce all our clothing, all our gasoline, our engine oil, our cooking oil. We can make our bread and our cereal, the most complete vegetable protein. You know, we could feed the planet. Every year, a cannabis plant, its biomass reclaims a foot of soil. In all these years, since 1937, we could have been reclaiming a substantial amount of desert and turned it into arable soil. You know, all this talk about, oh, well, overpopulation, there's not enough food and so forth. It's all nonsense. There's no overpopulation at all. The entire population of the planet could fit within, say, the state of Texas or Alaska even, and still have some space around them. But, I mean, there is no overpopulation. That's all, you know, Jewish nonsense to justify the extermination of our people. Well, there's too many of you. And, you know, lots of us bought into that back in the 70s when that overpopulation nonsense was really strongly pushed. And lots of us chose to have only a couple of children as a result. Now, in retrospect, we're looking back and saying, whoa, what were we not thinking? You know, so we've been on the very wrong paradigm, not just energy, but just our whole, the way we live on this planet, that entire structure is based on lies and nonsense. And we need to put this whole train back on track. And the best way to do it is to expunge the international parasite off the planet altogether and then get it out of the way first. And then we can get on track back to creating the paradise that was intended here. But under the present sort of direction we're in, we better start straightening our backs really soon and growing a pair, because things are heading in a very negative direction. And that's why I suggest, if you haven't done so yet, pay attention to what's going on in Ottawa, because that's what's going on for the rest of the world, you see. So if we can make that stand there and then maybe go bowling with the trucks, and get rid of all those automatons. They're not human anyway. They're just simple order takers. They have no soul. They're a bunch of soulless creatures that are standing there with weapons ready to shoot. They've already, I think, they killed or damaged an old lady with a walker by running her over with a horse.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean, it shows you what they're already beating truckers, peaceful demonstrators with the butt ends of their guns.
Yeah.
Assault weapons, by the way. It's okay for them. And the thing is, we pay for all that stuff to intimidate us with and to hurt us with. We pay for that.
Yeah.
You know, like all these police cars and all this equipment they've got, that's all on our dime. To oppress us with. Well, it's time that people started to seriously look at fighting back. Because throughout history, standing there with a rose between your teeth, you end up losing your teeth and being thrown in a hole and forgotten about. That's how it's always been. But now is the time we need to totally get rid of this elite group, this tiny 2% that totally controls just about everything. And now, if they win this war in Ottawa, you know, I don't know, where else are we going to turn?
Well, Gretchen, you're making some great points, especially with the hemp. You know, you can build houses out of the hemp fiber, too, by making blocks out of it. I've seen it done. It's really quite incredible. And, you know, you can actually make cars out of it, too. Henry Ford made a hemp car back in the 30s. Yeah. And of course, Henry Ford was against us getting involved in World War II. And I'm sure he'd be spinning in his grave right now if he knew what happened to his company and the, what they're doing with the Ford Foundation. Really quite incredible. Paul, why don't you go next, sir? What's your take on, Giuseppe's questions about AIDS and the Jew jab?
Well, I think, frog in my throat there. I think, COVID. It's yet another aspect, you know, of the ongoing distraction, disturbance, communication space. So is there a good dollop of fear to be delivered with it? It would appear so, yes. And so that's why it's present. Will it be true? I don't know. It might be. But does it matter? The mere fact that they put the stories out is really the main point of the whole thing, because most people tend to react pretty rapidly on what they read. They don't have a, they seem to lack an editor, a sub-editor in their head that says, whoa, stop, let's think about this for a couple of days. And this is because most people, I suspect, are not really used to actually considering things to any real level. Because, you know, they want to trust the government. It's like an abused child. That's really what we're dealing with, you know, in a lot of cases. And I suspect we've all got part of that in our personality as well. I have, you know, there's a bit like, oh, will you sort it out for me? That bit, right? Okay. And it's a great weakness, but it's understandable why it pops up. I think the other thing as well is just touching on some of the points that Blackbird raised and that Gertchen just raised there as well, is we're not in control of anything much. So it's, when we're listening to their media, we must continually, I've like got a hammer on the wall, metaphorically speaking, to hit myself over the head and go, wake up, don't fall for something else, because it's so easy to do. Because you get sucked into the drama of the whole thing. Oh, they said this and this is that, and everyone's going to get AIDS, and there's graphene in this. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I don't know. Also, if you go around championing that stuff, and it doesn't turn out to be true because they were lying to you about their lies in the first place, you start to look a bit clumsy in terms of the way you're dealing with these things. I actually think, I don't know what the solution is. I think there's a lot of aspects to it. But the one that, I mean, you know, all of these things, these good things that we can envisage doing, these things about actually resolving energy situations, will rely upon the fact, it seems to me, that we are in control of our nations. And we are not. And we haven't been for a long time. And so we're in a sort of mature, diseased situation, which takes you a long time to sort of discover and see and really sort of pare through the details of it. But my nation is not governed by Englishmen who are loyal to the English at all. Hasn't been for a long time. I think America was when you started off. But then, you know, you look into that and you see that it was a project of the Freemasons, because they wanted to create this new Atlantis, according to Bacon, or they wanted to mix everybody up because, you know, that's how we're going to create the new man, the great Freemasonic project, you know. We're going to finish this great work, which doesn't need to be finished, which doesn't even need to be started, you know, because they're men. And what's that Masonic thing, that man is the measure of all things? I think not myself. I'm going to pass on that one. Thank you very much. And so, you know, if we're trying to find out who's going to be the top dog in all of this, well, it ain't going to be any of us. And it certainly ain't going to be the bad guys, because they're continually and consistently run against the law, the actual things that are impinging down upon us all the time. So I think that race is key, because it exists. It's not something to be not considered. It's absolutely vital that races stick with their own race, whichever one you're in, and organize their affairs accordingly and learn from their own mistakes accordingly and don't interfere with other people. But, of course, the history over the last 500 or 600 years is nothing but global interference, where our host nations have been infiltrated in the power centers, courtesy primarily of banking has been the route through, and it still is the primary control pivot point for all of this stuff. All these guys that are lying in the paper, they get paid this week, right? Unlike maybe some of us here for what we're doing, right? They're going to get paid. They sleep all right at night time. We don't get paid so much. So it's a massive problem, and arguments about or discussions about them making a lot of money I don't think are really relevant, because it's not about that. It's not about making more money. It's about making sure that you and I and others don't have an opportunity to get stronger. That's all it's about. It's not about them getting more. It's about making sure that you and I are under the curse of the bill. How are we going to pay the bills this month? That kind of low-level stuff is keeping so many of our people in check. And, you know, Pound, Ezra Pound, really had the solution when he studied the Byzantine Empire. And the any alien, let's put it this way, anyone who was not a Byzantine could not occupy a position of power in the realm of government, education, banking, or the law. Those four areas. And that thing lasted for 1,300 years. As far as we know, the longest-lasting empire of them all. You know, it may have had some other faults. Of course, when it went down to the parasite opening the gates up and letting the enemy in. But 1,300 years is a bit of a stretch. How long is the American Empire going to last? 130? How long is the British? 130? It's a joke, and we know why. So we're not in charge. I don't know how we resolve that, but I suspect everybody here, from what we're saying and the fact that you are here, have all developed an attitude of resilience and understand this on some level, whether you describe it the way I'm describing it or not, it doesn't really matter. But we've got this attitude, and what I tend to see in others, most of the people that I see walking up and down the street, they don't have that attitude. They don't have that sort of intensity of focus about the fact that their life matters. Their own life actually matters. So but it's growing. You know, I don't want to be sort of pointlessly optimistic, but I think it is improving. And so we will be, what did Mencken say? The whole purpose of practical politics is to, I'm mullering this one, something like besiege the public with lies, all of them basically hobgoblins of the mind. And that's what they do, you know. So the war in Ukraine, is it a genuine thing? I don't know. I really don't know. But I do know that they're lying to me. I know that every day.
Right. Oh, well, that's just brilliant, Paul. And, you know, you're so right. We are not in control of our own nations. And that's got to be a starting point of understanding. And I'm a huge fan of Mencken. The guy was just brilliant on so many different levels. And also, he was known to be an anti-Semite, just in case anyone was wondering.
Naughty man. What a naughty
very,
man.
Very, very naughty. Okay, let's move on to Mr. Mike Gaddy, the Rebel Madman. Mike, what are your thoughts, sir?
Well, it's certainly, I'm with BB9. It's certainly interesting to sit here and listen to the great minds that are assembled here today, present company excluded. Of course.
Yeah.
But I look at, I don't see how that we the people, I hate that phrase, but how we can ever consider ourselves to be the winner in what's coming. It's not important in my mind that I win. It's important that I survive. And I know to many that's going to sound defeatist, but you sure as hell are not going to triumph if you don't survive, and you're not going to have a chance to be involved in what happens if you don't survive. So I'm kind of off on that tangent a bit, but I do not see a victory as we think it is, but I think one is being planned for right-wing America. 27 Democrats saying they're not going to run again in the House of Representatives. And many of them, it doesn't make sense. I think we're being set up. The PSYOP is here for a massive Republican win at the polls in 2022. And with the hope by the people that it's going to be a big triumph in 2024 when they take over the White House. Right now, I would say that somewhere between 75 and 80% of the American adult population believes that there's an answer to this problem at the ballot box. No matter how many times they're cheated, no matter how many times it's presented, that mindset, it cannot be relinquished. They will not relinquish the fact that they believe that they can go, they don't have to do anything else. They don't have to listen to these programs. They can watch TV. They can watch cars go fast in a circle. They can just really enjoy themselves and have a fantastic time because it doesn't matter because there's an election coming up. And election is the, I used to call it the pacifier that the government allows you to suck on while they steal everything you have. And I still believe it's there because, you know, I look at the people I associate with and that I see on a daily basis. And almost, I'd say 90% of them are talking about it. Can't wait till election. Can't wait till the election. But it's, how do you change that? Maybe some of you gentlemen can give me some ideas on how you change the mind. And I believe that 75% of America does believe that the answer is at the ballot box. So thanks, Dave, for allowing me to spout on there.
Oh, that's a great point, Mike. And, you know, I think, too, if what you're saying comes to fruition, that the Republicans take back the House and the Senate, it's going to show everybody, hey, look, the system works. That, you know, your vote counts and we're going to change things. And of course, it's just a hamster going around on a wheel inside a cage. And, I think that's exactly the situation. Of course, you know, nobody on either side of the aisle has ever said, hey, this vaccine may not be such a good idea for you to take. It might be actually quite dangerous. So, interesting points, Mike, and excellent, excellent. Let's move on to DW, the retired pilot. And survivor, DW, what is your take on things?
Well, it's this is fantastic. I'm like Blackbird 9. I'm sitting here taking notes. On Giuseppe's question about the COVIDiocy, this is part of a controlling the narrative and adapting to the narrative as it plays out, because there's always a dynamic. Yeah, as much as they have game theoried and warp played these different scenarios out, there's always that, you know, dynamic the unknown, and which always comes into play. And so what I hear in the COVID's story is the old CIA response of plausible deniability. You take that, you bake that into the cake. One of the ingredients is always a, you call it backing up or, retreating from their aggressive stance. But it involves them being able to go back and then redefine through word sorcery and previous neuro-linguistic programming. Okay, so what do I mean by that? Well, you know, in the 80s, you know, 40 years ago, through the 40s, 90s, 2000s, early 2000s, AIDS was a, the idea of what it was and how you responded to it and what it meant was programmed into people. So now they're attaching it, linking it to the COVID, as a reprogramming. And this is attacked. And it was thought out well in advance, as a contingency. And, the older people and the older generations, they can reacquire and leverage again this AIDS idea into COVIDs. And where people die from, their own core morbidities. And it wasn't a vaccine. It was their comorbidity. This is their plausible deniability. So, of course, this works because if we go to Psych 101, we find out that, in abusive relationships, you are conditioned to participate in your own abuse through learned helplessness. Well, when we look around, this is what we see. This is what people are describing and what we're trying to articulate about, other men and women and their lack of response is a learned helplessness and dependency. And, of course, they don't have any other alternatives established in their lives, whether it be family, finances, or logistics. So this is part of their criteria. So on a slightly larger scale, I would just like to say that, protocol COVIDs is just premeditated murder by pharmacide. That's all it is. It's simply that. That's just exactly right. Simply that. And it would happen to be the Zionist Jews' final solution for you. Let's just make this clean and simple. It's their final solution. And
you're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Ladies and gentlemen, your lives are becoming more difficult as the life force of your world is draining away. Have you noticed that as everything around you seems to decline, one thing still grows? It is the power of your rulers. None of their plans and directives have solved your problems or made your life better. The only result has been their increased control over you at the cost of your freedom. Do you know why? You gave them the power. They called for your sacrifice, and you thought it was noble. They said if you worked for yourself and your family, that you were selfish and uncaring, and they made you feel ashamed. They denounced the leaders of industry as greedy exploiters. You agreed. All evil needs to win is the consent of good people. To everyone within the range of my voice, you now have a choice to make. If you decide to support the notion of sacrifice enforced by the state, your game is up. Your world is in a downward spiral, and you will ride it down to destruction. But if you share the values, if you believe that your life is a sacred possession for you to make the most of, if you want to live by the judgment of your own mind, not edicts from the state, then follow our lead. Do not support your own oppressors. Stop letting the system exploit you. Form your own communities on the frontiers of your crumbling world. Your rulers hold you by your endurance to carry the burdens they impose, by your generosity when you hear cries of despair, and above all, by your innocence which cannot grasp the depths of their evil. The world you are living in is the world they wanted. Leave them to it. Those who are eager to build a better world, a world of freedom and opportunity, a world based on mutual respect. In that world, you will not receive alms, nor pity, nor forgiveness of sins, but honor, respect, and justice. Don't let the fire go out spark by irreplaceable spark in confusion and despair. The world you desire can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It is yours.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. The number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. It's your world. Take it. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Revolution. Radio! Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. And, you know, this is such a great assemblage of minds here. I'm just honored to be part of it. And every answer we've been getting has been so brilliant and just on point. And I'm going to try to stay out of the way and let it happen. DW, why don't you finish up your thoughts before we hit the top of the hour, and then we'll go on to Breiser. Go ahead, sir, DW.
Okay, well, thanks, Dave. One of the patterns I've identified here is, with language and, its use over the last, couple of years, but most importantly, the criteria as to whether or not your actions and speech, meet the arbitrated standards of, terrorism. And, what I've identified here is that the same standards that are used to establish whether or not you are a terrorist is the same standards in speech and actions that would identify you as an anti-Semite. And, you know, that was kind of low hanging fruit. It's just kind of laying out there. But it's, that's what's being used in the, for excuses for, emergency national emergencies and continuity of government and the emergency acts of, Tutti Frutti Trudy, took, what he did there, last week. But I just want to close this up real close with perspective on history. And the reason a lot of the guys that are here have insight is because they've looked strongly at history. And I want to just use some source document here from a book by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock in the Synagogue of Satan, and a letter from the Spanish Sephardic Jews to the synagogue in Istanbul at the end of the Byzantine Empire, where they had a synagogue and it was a stronghold, and they were complaining about being abused. And the response of the rabbi was to them was, well, I'll just run down the list here real quick, try to make it brief. As for what you say about the command to despoil your property, make your sons merchants that they may despoil little by little the Christians of theirs. As for what you say about making attempts on your lives, make your sons doctors and apothecaries, pharmakia, that they may take away Christian lives. What are we doing here? We're reading 1492. As for what you say of their destroying your synagogues, make your sons canons and clerics in order that they may destroy your churches. The termites have been at work there, haven't they? As for the many other vexations you complain of, arrange that your sons become advocates, lawyers, and see that they always mix in affairs of state, and that by putting Christians under your yoke, you may dominate the world and be avenged on them. Ding, ding, ding. Okay, and then he finally ties this up by saying, do not swerve from this order that we give you, because you will find by experience that humiliated as you are, you will reach the actuality of power. Signed, Prince of the Jews, Constantinople, 1492. So I see a pattern. I don't know, maybe, what do you think?
All signs point to yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock is such a brilliant guy. It's been my pleasure to get to know him recently, and his book is really up there on the top five books, top five, top ten books on the subject. I mean, it's really a great book, and that was a great quote. And I love your concept of pharmacide. That's great. It goes right along with BB9's assertion of the white coats of Baphomet. That's so on point. Let's turn it over to Breiser, and then I want Giuseppe to answer his own question. So, Breiser, go ahead, sir.
Yes, Dave. I don't know if you saw my question I put into the chat. I just want to give everyone an update on our good mutual friend, Graham Hart.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was talking to him last week. He's been allowed out for 5 days every month until he's released. So he was out last week, and I talked to him on the phone, and he's in good spirits, right? He's got, he's off his medications, these opioid medications he was on. He's off them completely, which is great. And you can hear it in his voice and everything. He's much more chirpier, and, you know, and he's doing okay in there. It's very relaxed where he is. It's kind of one of these low security prisons. And, he's got his own cell, you know, the cell, he's got his own cell, basically, and he's got a TV in there, and he's got, you know, access to different things, and strums his guitar when he can, and, you know, this type of thing. And he just wants to thank everyone who sent him letters and cards and parcels and everything. He really, really appreciates that. It really makes his day when he gets those. He's getting on well with the prisoners, the other ones. In fact, a lot of the prisoners in there, would you believe, are murderers who are coming to the end of their sentence.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And he's actually getting on quite well with them. And they said they're just normal people who just went wrong somewhere along the line. It just was either crimes of passion or greed or something like that. Or they weren't the usual type of murder that we think of, you know. And a lot of them don't want to even leave now because they've been in prison that long, you know. They actually don't want to leave. So he's kind of found that all very interesting, and he's, But he's doing very well. He's not being threatened with any jab or anything like that, and he doesn't wear masks, so he doesn't have any of that stuff. So he could be let out in June. The parole is coming up in June, but he doesn't know if he's going to get out then. But if not, he'll definitely be out in December. But that's even still, that's 16 months, you know what I mean, for just in his mind. Really,
and for words. For words. That's what we all need to remember. It should give us all pause. He was put in jail for words. It's really incredible. Go ahead, Breiser. I didn't mean to step on you.
Yeah, and then just the court case, I wanted to kind of get an update on what happened in court. Basically, he wasn't given an opportunity. He knew what to do, but because he went into court, because of the whole COVID nonsense, it was all glassed, you know, all this perspex glass everywhere. And he wanted to hand a piece of paper to the judge, and he wasn't allowed to do that. And the judge knew exactly what he was trying to do and just remanded him in custody straight away. So there was no, he didn't get a proper hearing the first time, you know. And then when he got out, because he was deprived of his meds, he was all over the place. He was hallucinating and everything. He wasn't thinking straight. So he lawyered up, and the lawyers made a complete mess of this completely. And he knows that now, you know, he knows it was an absolute joke, but he wasn't really in, you know, they kind of, he was deflated, and his spirits, he wasn't in that kind of real mode of, I'm going to fight these so-and-sos, right? He kind of just put himself at the mercy of the court. Because the lawyer said, well, you get a 2-year suspended sentence, maybe. That's what they'll probably give you. And then when the date came closer, they think, no, Graham, I think you're going to have to do time. So, yeah, he was framed. He was set up. And that's what happened. So that's just to give you the update on Graham. But he sends everyone his regards anyway, and he's doing very well. So, again, thanks
great.
To everybody.
That's great.
He sent letters and cards and parcels. Keep sending them, folks. Keep sending them into him because he really does appreciate it, you know. So, anyway, go back to the whole COVID's thing. Yeah, I'm not surprised to kind of hear this. It hasn't really kind of taken off. I mean, a lot of people aren't really talking about it too much. But, again, if the media keep pushing it, a lot of people will buy into it. And what I can see here is if they frighten enough people with this, particularly young married couples, right, heterosexual couples, they won't want to have children now because of this, right? So this is playing into the whole white genocide plan, really, isn't it? And also, if they do have children, well, then the first thing they're going to, the baby is going to have to get an AIDS jab and a COVID jab on top of all the other ones they get. So this is just playing into the game again, you know, it's just continuing the whole thing on, isn't it? And you're just going to frighten a lot of people now who maybe want to have children, and they're just now afraid to do it because they could have AIDS. Now, as you guys know, that I'm not on board with this whole virus theory at all. I've been looking at the work of Stefan Lenka and Tom Cowan and others, right? And that's where I am. And I know it's a tricky one for people, and I don't want to be going into that now. But this whole thing, whether you believe it doesn't exist or not, it's just such a hoax, you know. And we've seen all these hoaxes before, haven't we, you know. And it's just, again, we have to kind of pull away the fog here, and we have to pull down the curtain. Right? Like in The Wizard of Oz, you know, and just see it for what it is. It's all nonsense, the whole lot of it. And that's where I'm at now. I'm kind of just looking at all of this. I laugh at all of this stuff now, really, because I've just got to that point where I know what they're doing. I know who's behind it. And I just thought it's not bothering me anymore too much. I hate to see people obviously being affected by it. But, and I do try and help them if I can, or try and, you know, discuss it with people. But there's only so much one can do. And, you know, if people are willing to listen, fine. But if they're not, off you go. It's your life. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, great point. And, you know, there is no proof that HIV causes AIDS. It's all just conjecture. Giuseppe, why don't you answer your own question, and then maybe you could kick off the next question, because your last question was so cogent and right on time. So go ahead, sir.
Sure. My assessment of changing the fear porn gaslighting narrative from COVID to COVIDs is because, like my dear friend who's coming to the Perfect Triangle returning March 4th, Dr. Judy Mikovits, has pointed out that all of the Jew jab scamdemics, bird flu, swine flu, SARS, MERS, AIDS, now SARS-CoV-2, they're all gain-of-function bioweapons. And to me, it's independent of the discussion of germ theory versus terrain theory, which is a fascinating discussion. And pretty much if you look into it, you realize that Pasteur was wrong and Beauchamp was much closer to the truth. And that is a fascinating discussion. And more people are waking up to it, like Breiser surely knows, like Dr. Lee Merritt, retired Navy surgeon, is on board now. And, you know, even many people recognize that the simplistic big pharma narrative, which always just drives you to take another Jew jab, that's their solution. And what's in the Jew jab? Nothing but poisons. So what they've done is Dr. Judy Mikovits, she was the guest on my first show, and she's going to be on the guest on number 86. She's been the most frequent guest because she's just absolutely brilliant and just speaks truths that very few other people will tell you, and has the experiential and academic training to back it all up. And essentially what it is these deadly, poisonous, toxic Jew jabs have poisoned people, poisoned the blood supply because of the donations of infected people from these Jew jabs, and they've intentionally or accidentally released every one of these scamdemics. And it's tragic that the same people who control big pharma control big media. And so the level of lies and gaslighting is off the charts, absurd, and yet only people who have lost a child because of the insane murderous injection of newborns, the only people who have had their beautiful little babies turned into white zombies from the injections of the Jew jab poisons, and from the Zionist destruction of the food supply with everything is got glyphosate and genetic modification for commercial and processed foods. So that's like the Mike Tyson 1-2 punch. And so the bottom line, as these brilliant gentlemen have pointed out, this is pharmacide. And it is just horrific that you've got, especially in the big cities, these virtue signaling communitarian libtards wearing their face diapers and just aching to have their 1-year-olds and 2-year-olds injected with the deadly Jew jab. It's absurd. I feel like I'm in a bad B-grade science fiction movie where the villain is a murderous veterinarian who somehow got to be the head of the biggest pharmaceutical company in the world. Oh, wait a minute. That's not a bad B-grade movie. That's what we're living with the vile chicken swinger Albert Bourla. That's exactly it. He's an incompetent, murderous veterinarian, and somehow now he understands human physiology and vaccination so well that he can save the day. I don't think so. He can murder millions, and it's going to be a billion people before it's all said and done. So that there's my opinion on that. And now let me tell you how I really feel.
Well, no, I don't want to step on you, but that's a great point about Bourla. And, you know, somebody earlier in the chat room was pointing out that Bourla has won all these Jewish prizes.
Yeah.
He won the Heretz Prize and the what's the other one? The Genesis
$1 million Prize one. Millennium Prize, yeah. Or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, the great point about Bourla. Go ahead, sir. I didn't mean to step on
you. Oh, no. It's awesome that we can talk about these things like adults. It's so good. And so I guess my next question for the panel, especially curious to hear, is how about Jeffrey Epstein's close friend and pimp, Jean-Luc Brunel, decided to hang himself in prison. And, oh, geez, the camera stopped working again. I mean, holy cow. It's so obvious, but maybe not. So I would like to get everyone's thoughts on another Epstein minion accidentally, intentionally killing himself. And, the camera system went off again. Huh, that's so weird.
Yeah, Blackbird 9, why don't you take that little nugget and run with it, baby? Go ahead.
Nothing to see here. There's no Unit 269 Echo behind the curtain at the prisons, right?
Yeah, man.
I'm researching this guy, you know, that's close friend of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, and just happened to hang himself, and there's, you know, nothing to see here. It's just one of the things, I guess, that strikes me is throughout the whole Pizzagate saga, you know, the Anthony Weiner, you know, his laptop, the Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, they never had any of their bank accounts seized and frozen. None of their assets were ever touched. But, you know, the truckers that, you know, somebody sent $10 to give, send, go or whatever, you know, they're going to have their bank accounts seized. And so we're just seeing this whole, you know, obviously a state-sponsored operation that, you know, this wasn't just some pimp, you know, whoring out, excuse my language, you know, young girls to elite people. This was a very sophisticated operation. And you, it's amazing how Mockingbird, which is completely dominated by alumni of Israel's Unit 8200, refuses to dig into this. And, you know, that violates Jewish Mashiach law, which, you know, it's against the, you know, Jewish law to turn over information to Goyim courts about crimes of Jews, even if the Jews are doing crimes. Yeah, you know, it's just that's not done, and that's Mashiach law. And so you're just seeing this play out. And then you see, you know, Unit 269 with, you know, alumni like Ehud Barak, and all the connections with Ehud Barak and Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, as well as people like Reverend John Hagee of Christians United for Israel, that whole PSYOP. And it's like, you know, he's not the head. The head of, you know, Kufi or whatever they call it, Christians United for Israel, is David Brog, which is Ehud Barak's first cousin. So this is all one big psyop on the American people, the European people, the Australian people, you know, all the world. And it's all about, you know, to blackmail these politicians and thought leaders and industry leaders into towing the line on the agenda. And so I always go back to the five B's of the Meany method: bully, bribe, blackmail, banish, and bury. And, you know, they're going to, you know, what do you want to, you know, for your allegiance? And we'll give it to you. And, you know, if we have to strong arm you, we'll blackmail you. And if we can't, we'll destroy you. And if we can't do that, we will take you out. I mean, this is an intransigent beast. The synagogue of Satan is an intransigent beast. And, you know, getting back to Graham Hart's thing, you know, I'm sitting here, you know, when that all was all coming down and realizing that my winter solstice Christmas show was entered into a UK court of law to put one of my friends in prison for wrongthink. And when I'm trying to contact his barrister and solicitor, I'm getting total stonewalled. His barrister wouldn't even talk to me. They said, you have to talk to his solicitor. I talked to his solicitor. They said, well, you know, write up whatever you want to say. It's like, do I need to fly there? We were ready to fly me over and trying to figure out if I could even fly now or if I'm on a, you know, no-fly list. And they're like, no, it's a done deal. You can't do anything. We don't want you here. And I'm like, I'm a piece of evidence in a criminal trial, and I am the son of a World War II veteran who supposedly fought to keep the UK free, and you're telling me that my Christmas show can be entered into a court of law as damning evidence to put somebody in prison because a certain group of Jews from the campaign against anti-Semitism found it offensive. And it's like, you know, these are words. You know, Graham's, you know, big crime was writing the song about Anne Frank, you know, the hoax train. You know, it was a brilliant song, just like Alison Chabot with Survivors. And it was because these chicken swingers got offended, you know, that's supposedly, you know, well, your free speech, you know, there's no place for free speech in our UK, in our Europe, in our Canada, in our United States. And so one of the things that we're seeing, you know, rolling out in this massive psyop that, you know, that all these people are compromised in is throughout this pandemic of COVID-9/11, what did not stop was all the anti-Semitism laws that are being crammed down everyone's throat in every nation and all the hate speech, hate crime laws. And if you look at the Bolshevik Revolution, the first thing they did was to make anti-Semitism a capital offense. And we're seeing that same playbook roll out, you know, in this whole agenda. It's like, why are these political leaders, you know, in parentheses here, you know, why are they so keen to, you know, pass these laws that completely undermine everything that, you know, European countries and civilization is based on, this idea of free expression, free speech, free association. And they're saying, oh, no, no, no. You know, we've got to have a special victim class of Jews. They're the super victim class. And you realize that these people like, you know, Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and Ehud Barak, their job was to compromise all these leaders so that these kind of laws will pass. So, you know, that's my take on it. I'm very touchy about the subject, if you might know. But back to you.
Yeah, just brilliant. And, you know, it's interesting how, you know, you talked about how these people's assets weren't touched. Well, neither was Les Wexner, the man who actually funded Jeffrey Epstein and his, you know, Victoria's Secret empire. His assets weren't touched. In fact, he's rarely even mentioned in regards to this incredible scandal. He just sort of just walked between the raindrops. So interesting little thing to note there. Gertchen, why don't you take this question? This is right up your alley. And one of the listeners, Merbailey, want to know the name of your cat. Maybe you could reveal that to us, too.
That cat, that's Matthias. The black and white one is Matthias. Yeah, it's one of three. I have three cats. My take on a few things here. Well, first of all, the idea of being against a language grouping, i.e. Semitism, it's a language grouping. Arabic, for example, Hebrew, these are Semitic languages. To be against a language group, the whole idea is absurd. And so people have to stop bending over when some chicken swinger waves that epithet in their direction. The same as, you know, calling me a racist, for example, because I'm pro my own race. But because I'm pro my own race, and I think we should start shooting back against BLM and Antifa and so forth, because I express that I have a love for my own race and a desire that our race remains, I am not welcome to show my artwork in an art gallery here locally that just opened up, because they will not show the work of a racist. Yeah. It's insanity. Black Lives Matter, well, I don't know, in some people's opinions, I suppose. But, you know, these creatures run around and burn things and destroy cars. And, of course, they always have to have, when there's the slightest little altercation, whatever, they have a sudden desire. They need to have brand new Nike running shoes and flat screen televisions and Gucci purses. And of course, because Martin Luther King had a dream that everything be free for Negroes, you know, there's the slightest little issue and they all run around and steal and plunder and destroy, but their bank accounts are not compromised. Their insurance is not removed from their vehicles. But yet here we have in Canada a whole bunch of peaceful truckers protesting legitimately, but not going far enough, in my opinion. When they were asked what exactly is their position, they were hard-pressed to actually voice what their position was. Well, it's hope, it's freedom, it's the mandates. But nobody is saying we need to hang Justin Trudeau, for example. you know, nobody is saying that we need to totally clean house. Now, I've been sitting here thinking I need to write a letter to the governor general, but, you know, just like my charter challenge to the attorney general for Canada, I mailed that registered mail, and I still haven't heard word from David Lametti, who is obviously a member of the fraternity, and I don't expect to hear from him. And then sending, you know, a statement to the governor general, it's just really a waste of time, isn't it? All this, oh yeah, we're going to petition the government, and we're going to stand here with signs on sticks. Unless we actually start shooting back and taking this into a hot war situation, the entity is going to keep pushing further, further, further until we absolutely have no opportunity left to fight back. And then, you know, what Alex Jones has been promoting, the idea of a prison planet, that is in fact what will come to be. And for those of you who have read anything by, say, Solzhenitsyn, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, for example, you know, it's very well delineated in his books, the Gulag Archipelago series, for example, what happens when the Bolsheviks, i.e. the Jews, because Judaism, communism, and Satanism, Luciferianism, it's all related. That's all one and the same thing. Same with demonocracy. A total top-down tyranny of the masses, completely led by their smaller noses, by the mainstream Jews media, you know. But the thing is that we have to realize that it's the Jews that are doing this, bottom line, not Zionists, it's not the globalists, it's not the, because that's just talking around the bush. The bush, the talking bush that's on fire. Talking to us, you know, that's the Jew talking to us. And we're going to turn everything into fire if you don't comply. And we'll burn your houses. We'll destroy your lives. We'll take your, you know, your children away. We'll reduce them to adrenochrome. I don't know. I know about this stuff. You guys know about this stuff. I'm no longer willing to sit here and just simply take it. I think it's time to start delivering some lovely cocktails to the local temples that these creatures worship in. I mean, that's what needs to happen. We need to now absolutely take it to the farthest step possible. Every Jew should be walking around, constantly looking over their shoulders now, fearful that we anti-Semites are going to come and round them up finally for a final solution.
Well, I think we're a long way from that, but those are some good points. And, you know, Gretchen, I've seen some of your paintings, and I'll just say that they are world-class works. And I don't say that to you just because I consider you a friend. I'm pretty critical, and those are really excellent paintings. They deserve to be hung in any gallery in the world, to be honest. So let's go on to Paul English. Paul, what are your thoughts on Giuseppe's question, sir? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is quite a chunky one, really, isn't it? Because it leads into chunky stuff. And Prince Andrew just got let off, didn't he, or something?
Yep.
Over here, I hear.
Paid off.
Nice, lovely. So he paid off, the lady who had all the charges. And then a few days later, a couple of weeks, this guy's swinging or whatever. Going. He was 72. It's quite, you know, quite courageous to kill yourself at 72. I think it's quite a strange thing, really. But no doubt that's not really the real story. I mean, will we ever know? As Blackbird was pointing out, no cameras. Pity. What a pity. Anyway, the bigger picture is touched upon by other comments by Frederick and Gertchen just there. I'm just going to sort of sidestep in a way, or just move parallel to it, because a key word, I think, I've mentioned this recently over the last couple of months when I've been on, is this word "we." It's a very, very small word, isn't it? But it tends to mean very, very big things, and it's very flexible. If I was talking about "we" as an Englishman here in England 100 years ago, everybody would have known exactly who I was referring to. And everybody would have thought themselves included, all my fellow Englishmen and English women, if they were listening to me in the pub when I talked about we and our interests, would that wouldn't need to be explained. But now it does in a way, because there really isn't a we in the way that there used to be. And so the idea of motivating people to take back charge of their nation is difficult in the sense that most people have given up on the idea or have been hypnotized into a condition where they don't even recognize it. I've mentioned before, you know, I've talked to people if they can define to me what a nation is. Because, you know, if we don't like the way things are going on, and I assume that we don't very much, everybody on this call for now, then we have to determine how we want to live. And that doesn't involve anybody else, actually, even though I know that there's lots of jiggery-pokery and unpleasantness taking place, and there's nothing new with that. This has been going on for 2,000 years. And very smart, bright, competent, and moneyed people, far more moneyed than we in the past, have known this too and have tried to deal with it. And yet they find that the we, the populace, tend to sort of get defrayed, apart from in Germany, I think, in the 1930s. That was a serious threat, you see, because that was organized all the way through. Not perfect, but that was their iteration at that time under those conditions. We don't have that at the moment. Now, the British have had a sort of tradition of being loyal to Britain, but it's crystal clear, of course, that this is a nation governed by Freemasons. And they're governed by something else, and so on and so forth, and it's been that way for a long time. So the idea of being some kind of an allegiance for we, the British, in my case, to come together and sort out this country is a very difficult task to know where to begin. How do you address it? When I speak to people who just live their lives here, it doesn't seem to be too important to them. They don't seem to have a connection to it. They think that anybody that lives here is in the nation. I've pointed out to them that they're not. You know, that it's a racial thing. And, of course, I would also suggest, because I mentioned it before, that race is, without doubt, the most foul and loathsome of the four-letter Anglo-Saxon swear words. You're not allowed to talk about it. Because it's, what it's going to do is going to lead into something. It leads into everything. It's at the top of my list of thoughts on all things, because corrections to the banking system, corrections to the way that we're governed, for me, is only about me and my people, because I have no right to make a decision about anybody else. And the fact, the error we have here is that we have other people living with us who are not British and never will be in positions of power, supposedly, in my nation. How am I supposed to think that my legal system is going to serve me? It isn't. It doesn't. I am not surprised because it isn't my legal system anymore. It's not for me. It's this hybrid sort of takeover, this like rot that's run through everything. So when the newspapers report things, when this agency is doing that, what's this got to do with me? Very, very little. It used to have a lot. It used to have a lot to do with me or my people where I live, because it was written by my people under possibly a more rigorous editorial policy. I mean, I don't know about that, because, you know, Stead and these other guys have been interfering with that in all sorts of ways going back a long time. Everybody understood the power of this thing to colour the opinions of people's minds. And, you know, it's rich coming from me. We have the London School of Economics and all sorts of other, you know, wonderful organizations, the Fabians and all sorts of things who are plotting, and they're all part of this nest of, you know, perfidious, nauseating plans and behavior against destroying us, our own people. And so, you know, the history here, because I can't speak for anywhere else, but I know this one in my bones, is that there is a divide. There's been a divide between the working classes, middle classes, and the upper classes, the tops, for a long time. They do look down upon us to this day. It's inherent within their behavior. They're a bigger threat to me, I think, seriously, than the Jew. Because without them, none of this could be possible. They've acquiesced. They've been bribed. They've been coerced. They've given in. They're foul. The Masons are a disgusting, wretched group of people who believe in some giant spider or something and think that all this hogwash that they've got about perfecting humanity is something that's a great idea. It's like Schwab and his idiotic things. I mean, it's going to be very effective, don't get me wrong, but that's because it's being read by other people who are mentally stunted. They're not family men. You know, I get this, I don't know, but I don't get this impression they've got loving wives or that they really care for their children, that they see the joy in these simple things, which is all that counts in my book. Everything else is just man-made palaver. But that's what counts. And that, in where I live, is not being addressed. So I can't speak to white people about being white over here. They want to run out of the room. It's fantastic. Fantastically interesting to watch it. You can't get, you know, and I've mentioned before, just taking it slightly to one side as well, that there's this sport called football. We call it football. You call it soccer, right? But we call it football. And we have a national team called England. But we haven't fielded a national team since about 1976. That is, the people on the pitch have not been 100% English all the way through. Therefore, I've said to people, do you support England? They go, yeah. And they say, well, you never have. You've never actually seen them play yet. Of course, they don't know what I'm talking about. I said, you haven't. I said, either we're going to stick with the dictionary and what these words mean, or you can kiss it all goodbye. And, of course, we know that the attacks on us start with the words and the remoulding of the definitions of words. And then we now includes everybody. We are all British. Well, we are not. Sorry. And we don't want to be, and we don't need to be. And yet again, this is part of these ideas, these solutions to a problem which doesn't exist. You know, it's this dangerous person, the do-gooder. And that's kind of what we're faced with. We're here to sort out these problems for you. We don't really want you to. You know, my view is, I've got problems, yeah, but they're mine, you know. They're for me to solve, and only me, not you. And so I think, you know, behind the back of all these great benign words that they use, because, you know, Schwab and all these Masons and all these other people, we're going to sort things out. It's just, as we know, it's just a cover. What they're really saying is, we're going to sort it out just so long as we're in charge. That's the key bit. And that's the key bit with the money. It's not about owning the money. It's about being in charge of it. And, you know, we've got this thing with the crypto going on and all this, and that's been I've been suspicious of it ever since it started, because I know about these things. And I think I mentioned there was a New York circuit judge about 2014, could have shut Bitcoin down then, and he didn't. He allowed the exchanges to carry on. And I went, oh, this is theirs. This is their pet project. Because there have been other things. Anything that's genuine that comes from the people gets hammered. Yes, absolutely hammered.
Right.
Crypto has not been hammered because that's what they want to move you to, and it's all another shell game. Now we're going to go all digital, and it's all going to be great. Forget it. You know. Sorry, I've moved around a bit there, but that's, you know, these one thing leads to another, doesn't it? When we start these discussions, it does to me anyway, and it just keeps coming back to this thing that I'm personally not including everybody when I talk. I can't. Neither can anybody else. But these globalists do. They assume that we're all part of this. We're all going to have an interdependent relationship. I'm not. Sorry. I'm not having that. Couldn't care less what you want. Because your ideas are very, very poor and are of no good to me and my people. And we don't mean you any harm, but you need to clear off. You need to go home and sort your own trouble out, and don't start coming here and telling me how to sort out mine. You know, we'll deal with it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Paul, you're just cutting so deep on so many different topics. You know, yeah, and you know, the working class—that's a huge issue that's being trampled upon. And imagine a world without plumbers, even for a day. I mean, come on, guys. Those are the people that keep civilization running as we know it. The working
class. I love plumbers,
not these elite thinkers. You know, exactly. Let's turn it over to Mike, the rebel madman, Gaddy. Mike, what are your thoughts, sir?
Wow. It's certainly interesting listening to all of this. But Paul, as a somewhat of a contradiction, I would ask, you said that our politicians they've sold out and they're not representing the people. But they're representing the people who provide them with the money. And I believe the people who provide the money are just as guilty as the people who sell out. Just a view from my saddle, I guess. But that's the way I see it.
No, I don't disagree with that, Mike. It's completely, absolutely right.
It just seems that, you know, and we have this. If we go back in history, and I'm going to jump into my forte if I have one, is the fact of the founding era of America. In 1787, those people who met in Philadelphia were not representing the people. They were representing the business interest. and Alexander Hamilton and Gouverneur Morris and John Wilson all stated as much. They said, oh, well, we have to create a government for the wealthy aristocracy. And then what we have to do, according to Sentinel or Samuel Bryan, who wrote his Sentinel, Sentinel says, well, then all we need for them to do is to wrap this thing in the cloak of divinity. And damned if they didn't. So now you've got millions upon over 100 million people who call themselves conservative Christians who have bitten into this thing and believe that what they're addicted to, what is destroying them, is their answer to freedom. That along with political parties. And neither one will ever work. It's not going to happen because the political parties elect the president, the people don't, or any other person in office also. I saw that happen on multiple levels in multiple states. So, and I'm certainly with everyone on this white thing. Our race is being attacked. If you do not recognize that, if you do not see that, you need to grab another beer. NASCAR's on, I believe. So, that will take care of your problem, Bubba, I promise. And again, we look at these things and, several people here have referred to them, and DW referred to Don Meredith. And I remember, growing up, being old enough to remember that power sweep by the Green Bay Packers. And Vince Lombardi became a legend and a hero by running the power sweep because no one could stop it. Right. And that is exactly what we're facing. We're facing this power sweep that we are incapable of stopping. And so let's survive it. Just my view, Dave.
Great points, Mike. And you may prefer watching cars move around in a circle really fast. I like watching move the ball down the field or put the ball in the hole. Those are my favorites. So let's move on to Daryl. DW, go ahead, sir.
Well, there's there's a lot of information we've put out here in the last hour. I have to admit I know little to nothing about Jack Brunet, but listening to everybody, what I do recognize here is another pattern. And the pattern is that murder, assassination, bribery, blackmail, and extortion has a lot more to do with real politics, spelled with a K, than anybody's vote. So I love quotes, and I can't help myself on this one because it can't really be said any better. Mr. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, we know they are lying. They know they are lying. They know that we know they are lying, and still they continue to lie. And the reason they do that is for all the aforementioned reasons, and I would probably have to, draw parallels with what Gurchin was talking about. This is why they continue to lie. They've never had any real pushback. And for the record, I just want to say that I am not anti-Semitic. I am anti-semantic. And this is exactly what follows on with what Paul was talking about with the use of words, and particularly the perversion of pronouns. And I've given this some thought. You see, most people pay no attention to how they use words and accept how words are used upon them. Specifically pronouns, personal pronouns. Pronouns establish a premise or a pretense. And if these pretenses are left unchallenged, you are determined in the argument or the conversation to accept the pretense as a fact. By this way, you can have, will be subconsciously directed into accepting a false thesis. Semantics with equivocation and nuances serve the same purpose in word sorcery. Ignorance of language is no excuse. The misuse of language is the government's excuse. And, this is really how it works. There is a system here, and it can be recognized, but you can't, you have to prioritize what's important to you. And if it's, soccer, football, or, cars running around in circles, then you're gonna lose the plot and miss the thread. And at that point, then all you have left to offer is suffering. And you know, on the matter of who we are, a nation, the strict definition of a nation is people of common birth. And when you take the commonality out of that birth, then you no longer, by definition, can have a nation. So these are the realities we deal with. And, you know, how do you come to terms with that? Well, you're living through it. So I know we're short on time, so I'll just keep it there.
Oh, that's just excellent, excellent. Breiser, we are running out of time. Breiser, give us your thoughts on Giuseppe's question, and then we'll see if we can give everybody a little time for a final thought.
I'll keep it quick, really, because I missed this story, to be quite honest. I didn't know this happened, but it doesn't surprise me that the cameras were switched off. I mean, where has this happened before? Oh, yeah, 9/11. Oh, yeah, the London bombings. Yeah, we've seen all this before, haven't we? So that doesn't surprise me that the cameras just switch off all of a sudden in these fake events, you know. But just to pull back on what Paul said about the word we, and, you know, when you look at these politicians and everything saying that we want to keep you safe and we are all in this for the common good, and then Klaus Schwab comes out and says, but you will own nothing. You will own nothing and you will be happy. So we know who the we is and we know who the you is. That's how they say it. They always say like we when they talk about them, but when it comes to us, it's always really you Goyim over there. This is for you, you know? So, other than that, the word magic, that's what DW was saying is correct. I mean, I've seen through this with my court cases and how they twist the language and use, all sorts of logical fallacies. They throw them in there to kind of just confuse you. But once you see through that, you know, you can deal with this quite easy. So I'll leave it there.
Great. Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much, Breiser, and really good to talk with you again. And I just want to thank everybody. It's been my honor to be part of this. Such a great collection of minds. I'm just blown away by what everyone has been saying. And so let's just do a lightning round of final thoughts. We only have about 6 minutes left. Giuseppe, why don't you go first? What are your final thoughts for today?
Well, my final thoughts are, what an honor to be part of your 100th show and to, sit at this table with a bunch of real men who use their big brains, to try and wake up the sheeple. And I think it's, wakey wakey time.
Yeah, well said. Okay, lightning round of final thoughts. Blackbird 9, go ahead, sir.
Again, congratulations on the 100th show. I wish you a great 100 more. And yes, I always go back to my adage that in an existential war, the act of surviving is an act of rebellion. You know, so this, we are in an existential war, whether you like it or not. And so it's time to wake up, level up, and party up. So thanks again for having me, and it's been an honor to be here with you gentlemen.
Oh, thank you. And as the Italians say, chin chin. Gertchen, go ahead, sir. Final thoughts.
It's been great to be part of this. I think we just made some history, as we tend to do when we get together. Really, fundamentally, people realize that it all boils down to claims of jurisdiction. The entity is claiming jurisdiction over you. Here in our Commonwealth countries, they claim the jurisdiction on the basis of the crown. And everybody seems to think, well, that's the monarch. But no, the crown is the city of London. That is the center of Jewish international finance. And it's a dead entity, a corporation that cannot contract. There is no one over us but God. We are sovereign beings. And so all these claims of jurisdiction by governments, it's all total nonsense. So don't buy into it. And then you can easily extract yourself from the tax system. I recommend everybody run up your credit cards and just let them go to collections. you don't have a contract with a third party. It's time to break the Jewish financial system, and that's a great way that we can bring down their house of cards. Thanks again, guys.
Great. Yeah, let's go on a spending spree. Good idea. I like it. Paul, go ahead, sir.
I'm just going to really echo what Gurdjieff was just saying, because it was kind of what I had in mind anyway. I think it's down to us to determine how we want to live. And, you know, my mantra to me is that I must spend more time each day thinking on that line as opposed to paying too much attention to what the retards are up to. They're a menace. They're very clever. They're cunning. They're very powerful. They're able to influence, unfortunately, most of our kith and kin. That's where the challenge lies. But, you know, this thing, one of the reasons why we're in such a problem is that there are laws that do pertain to us under the laws of God. And it's the degree to which we've moved away from them. I'm not talking about churches here. It's the degree to which we've moved away from them that has allowed the enemy to move in and take over. People are confused. And they're looking to ally themselves with where they think they're going to get beat up the least. It's not really going to work. There is a simple sort of proposition before us. Our people suffer like hell, literally, when we drift away from those laws. It's a direct relationship. And when we move back to them, we become strong again. And then we say clear things again. And we're not foul, we're actually strong. And that's what we're looking to. I'm personally interested in that process of recovering our strength as people in a simple, dignified way under the true laws of God. Because the laws of men, plainly, do not work. I'm not interested in unpicking all the mess that they've dumped on us. And I'd just like to say it's been fantastic being part of this tonight. Thanks for the invite. And really, really enjoyed it. And look forward to show number 200, Dave.
Oh, thank you. And great thoughts. And, you know, they are cunning and devious, but they do not have wisdom, and that is their great weakness. Mr. Mike Getty, go ahead, sir.
Well, Dave, I would like to echo the others and would like to congratulate you on your 100th program today. It's been fantastic to have had you on my program and to have been on yours as well, and to be included in this group of men is quite an accomplishment in and of itself. So I'm not going to say much more than that, except to say I echo BB9's feeling that to survive is to be victorious.
That's so true. Very good. DW, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I can just sum this up in a simple statement that says, beware of the misanthrope that masquerades as the philanthropist. Every time you see philanthropy, you're dealing with, in all probability, the misanthrope. So,
yes, yes. And Breiser, why don't you take us on out? Final thoughts, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for inviting me on the show. A big one, yeah, 100 shows. That's great. And may have many hundreds more. I've known you a long time now, and it's great to see you've done this. So that's really good. You're doing a great job. Final thoughts. Well, we just got to stand our ground, folks, and get through this. It's going to be there's a big storm coming, and a proper one, not the fake one we thought we were going to get here last night, but this is a big one. And we just have to stay strong and look out for each other. And if they do come for you, well, you've got every God-given right to defend yourself. So defend yourself by any means necessary. And that's it, really. I can't say any more than that.
Oh, great final thoughts. And thank you so much to everybody. And, you know, this show has just flown by. I'm really amazed at how quickly it went by. I just want to thank everyone again. It's been such an honor to hear such great thinking and such deep thoughts and also some solutions, which is what we need to focus on, as Paul was saying. It's time to have solutions and determine how we want to live. That's everyone's God gift, right?
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyper thinking. Welcome to the Crypt.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more...
Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have. Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I'm seeing such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.